Film Vault.
Yes, Film Vault. Welcome, everyone, to the Film Vault. This is Anderson. I'm Ryan Bishop. We're your hosts.
Wait, are we still having issues?
I'm still having issues, but I'm powering it through. I'm giving it to the listeners.
My headphones are cranked, I just realized, and so it's all distorted, but I can hear.
Okay. Yeah, mine are...
But that's not good. Like, I can't turn it down.
No, I can't do it.
I'm not being a professional.
It's just power through. Power through! Power through.
Okay. Do we start over? We're sorry.
Spanning time. Absolutely not. We're wires exposed. We're
really?
Warts and all.
Jesus.
Well, headphones were coming in one channel. You know what? We'll fix it.
Oh, so much better with you off.
So close. That wasn't me.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, now we're talking.
Now it's all great. One channel.
Well, you're fine. Hey, look, dude.
Power
DJ,
through.
Like I do.
Power
look.
Through. One ear off.
Yeah,
nice.
One ear. You got to be cool guy. It's like wearing your backpack. You know the nerds today, they wear the backpack with the straps on both. You know that?
You know when... Oh, really?
Logan, when you go to school, did you one-strap it or two-strap
it? No, two-strapped.
Yeah. I think it was like a dividing line somewhere.
This is a bit from 21 Jump Street.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Well, it's a true thing, though. Like, it's actually happening.
Because they did this whole thing where he was like, no, you got to one-strap it, man. You got to one-strap it. And then he gets there and everyone's wearing two straps.
Yeah, like you would get a pummeling if you two-strapped it.
Speaking of cool guy, you know what? Sadly, when I checked out of even having an interest in seeing the movie Aloha by Cameron Crowe, who I love.
I saw
it. You did?
In theaters.
And it was bad?
It was okay. I flick-fested it here in depth.
I
talked about how Matt Damon's in it. Don't you remember that?
That's We Bought a Zoo.
I was joking. It's a callback
right.
to Thor.
Oh,
come on.
Hey, I checked
the
out.
Results are in.
I was like, oh, new film by Cameron Crowe. Let's see what happens. And as soon as Alec Baldwin was like, and then cool guy over here. Just, I was like, no military officer would say that. No higher up 65-year-old man would say that in the military. No one would call a guy a cool guy.
Why not?
It was never happened. Mm-hmm. And I knew the movie was not going to be good.
Okay. Look, what are we doing this week? And it's a bit of a makeup call, I think, on our part. Because the Kevin Spacey news about him being recast and pulled entirely, like, it's unprecedented, essentially.
That is shocking.
Happened, I think.
Should we set the table for people
the day of that we recorded, the morning after we recorded is when it dropped. And that happens on the show sometimes because, you know, we record a couple days before we actually put the show up. And some big movie news happens sometimes and we don't get to report on it or discuss
comment
it.
Comment on it, yeah.
So Tam, listener Tam Smith, she suggested that we do a full episode on roles that have been recast, which is what we're doing here.
It's a great idea. The news broke that Kevin Spacey had done some inappropriate things sexually with some people back in the day, and the public opinion came down fast and hard on him, and he was persona non grata, such to the point that as far as I can tell, an unprecedented move, just small movie, a big movie release starring him Matt Damon and who was the...
Matt Damon is not in this movie.
Mark Wahlberg, sorry. Mark Wahlberg and someone else big. And then directed by Ridley Scott, like you said.
Ridley Scott.
The movie is done, in the can, due to be released soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but due to be released soon, you can imagine it's in
December
final color correction and
the reason
final
I
bits.
Make this noise is I have to imagine every single person listening to this knows all about this.
Well, no, I know. I'm thinking of my mom. I don't know if she knows the story.
Oh, so this is just for your mom? Could
That's
you
right.
maybe send her a text?
So listen up, mom.
Off air. About what's
and
going
if there's
on?
One, I'm sure there's more. But they are going back and reshooting Kevin Spacey's scenes as J. Paul Getty in All the Money in the World. And that, as far as I can tell, has not been done before. So this is a timely and interesting topic. As soon as it was mentioned by you, I was like, yeah, you know, Eric Stoltz and Back to the Future and all that stuff.
Oh, dude, you just ruined my number one, bro.
I'm sorry, but then I was like, I don't know how many there actually are. Oh, it's a fruitful topic. It is a fruitful topic.
Here's a fun little
so
aside.
Much so that we're going to break it up into men and women.
Yeah.
Male, female roles.
This is going to be all dudes, and we're gonna do the ladies soon, probably in the next few weeks, because there's some really good ones with the ladies I found in my research. Some of them I already knew, obviously. But some of my top five news to me.
Absolutely.
It was really fun researching this one. And these will be like little pieces of trivia and it's fun little facts. I like it when we do these kinds of things. They're not like personal favorites. Like, oh, it was my favorite when so-and-so got replaced by so-and-so. But they mean a lot to me because the movies meant something to me, or the actor who got replaced or did the replacing. So this will be fun. Also, a little aside.
Wait, can we finish up talking about this first? Because I agree
I'm still on all the money. Okay, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was only talking about the list, but it's a piggyback on what you were saying.
But before we move on from all the money, the guy that's replacing him, Kevin Spacey, is Christopher Plummer, who you might know his work from. I'm drawing a blank on that movie that we both love with all the great patter.
Oh, Danny Collins.
Danny Collins. Yes,
he's in many movies. He's
a, but
character actor.
So he's playing senior, right? Mm-hmm. And then his grandson in the movie is being played by a character, an actor named Charlie Plummer.
Really? No relation.
No relation.
Wow.
As far as I know.
Yeah, I agree with everything Anderson said about this list.
Charlie Plummer. You might know him from King Jack. For those of you who saw King Jack and love King Jack, he's the lead kid in King Jack.
Agreed with Anderson, everything Charlie he said Plummer. About the top five. These are not so much my favorite, but they are, for me, some of my favorite movies. They're iconic roles. I try to go for iconic big roles that you can almost not imagine anyone else in, so it's kind of shocking that they got so far down the road with someone else. And only two of them I knew about ahead of time. Like, yeah, I knew that guy was replaced, but three out of my top five came as news. It's a really fun topic to research. One of the rare ones that involves a lot of research, but as I went down the line, I'm like, wow, this is fascinating.
Yeah, it really was fun.
I have a couple of also-rans that I like.
I want to do like top five biggest tragedies on film sets, like, you know, that kind of thing. I've been pitching that for a while. Like,
it's a great idea.
It's almost like a little, you know, history lesson almost. It'll be fun. Also, it sounds like you did the same thing, but I made sure that, all of my choices, they actually shot some footage. They shot for some days at least. It wasn't like this guy had the role and then last minute the studio pulled the rug out. That happens all the time. And there's countless movies out there. And that's all, maybe a whole another list or just a fun discussion where, you know, Will Smith was offered the role but turned it down for like Django. That's not what we're doing.
Yeah, like what could have been.
We're talking about where they actually said, we got to pull the fucking plug on this guy and replace him or else our movie is lost at sea.
Yeah, four out of my five are exactly what you're talking about. One, they got pretty far down the road with the actor before he was ultimately replaced. But all of these, to some degree, some footage or some images exist out there of this person as that character.
Speaking of that or not moving on from that, before I forget, I want to bring it up. It was brought to my attention by a listener. This is an interesting little, maybe we could talk about this at the end of the show or maybe off air, but what do you guys think about maybe every now and again switching up the gambling, what we do with the Rotten Tomatoes there at the end of the show?
Terrible idea.
To what percentage of listeners have seen blank, which comes up a lot on this show. What percentage of listeners, like I would love to do a poll, what percentage of listeners found out about what happened with Kevin Spacey getting pulled from All the Money in the World on this show? And your mom would be the one vote.
How do we do this polling?
Like Facebook's got the poll in over there, right?
Yeah, we do.
So that's just like a fraction of our audience, though.
Well.
Yeah, but it's the fraction that interacts.
I'll meet you both halfway and say
it's not a true representation of our audience.
It's not scientific, but it's fun.
It's not a bad idea. Maybe in the spring or at some point when there's not an interesting spring. Well, I'm saying there's not an interesting release coming out in theaters to gamble on, like literally movies we don't care about or haven't heard about. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't be a bad idea. Like I do wonder what percent of our audience has seen The Godfather, and we can run a Twitter poll and a Facebook poll, and that week instead of gambling, be like, okay, well let's run the poll and see what the results are.
I think Logan's concerned about more work.
No, it's not even that. No. That's easy to do, making a poll on Facebook and Twitter. I mean, I'm just concerned with, we had this argument before about how much skill is involved or how much can you really guess the Rotten Tomatoes score, and I feel like this is along those same lines, the same kind of argument.
I don't understand anything.
I think the argument before had been, it was about how much information you had going into Rotten Tomatoes, and then we had an argument, I think it was on air, about what does it matter how much information you have beforehand, because you can't actually guess the Rotten Tomatoes score. So isn't this the same argument then? Because you can't actually guess or make any kind of educated guess.
I make predictions about the what our listenership has seen and what level. You know, like,
this is actually more fair in a way because we can't be possibly poisoned by.
I was pointed in the direction by a listener. I'm afraid I don't have the listener's name, but they pointed me to a link that took me over to Red Edit, and there's a full discussion going on about this and the pros and cons of it. And I just thought I'd bring it to the table.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I'm surprised you didn't see it. I know that you scour that Red Edit.
I never actually. What is it called?
Red edit.
I think it's a good idea.
Hey, it's working. Everything sounds good for a second.
I think it's a good idea, and we should do it, like I said, maybe in the spring or anytime when there's a week for movies.
Moving on. The results are in. Speaking of absolutely scientific and accurate, I asked everyone to email me, get in touch with me if they thought that it was a big issue.
You counted all your emails?
Oh, yeah. Dude, I spent more time researching this and going through all my emails than I did probably researching for the show.
You would be the one. Never mind.
What's that?
No, good.
I'd be the worst what?
Nothing.
I'd be the worst what?
Person.
At?
Period.
Uh-huh. I feel like you had a more thought out idea there.
I might have. Yeah. I want to hear the results.
First, some quotes. John Brown weighs in with, Brian is a crazy person. Knowing Matt Damon was in Thor is not a spoiler.
Can you go to the Reddit page and have some quotes ready, please?
Chad Eggleston.
Excuse me, our Anderson and Brian page.
I have one from Reddit because he actually copied and pasted. And he's like, this is what I put on Reddit. People use a lot of four-letter words over there in their old Reddit. Chad Eggland says, as far as the reveal of Matt Damon and Thor, the smug one owes you an apology. I haven't seen Thor yet.
Oh, you fuck. Not, you can't.
It does not bother me to know that Matt Damon has a cameo. My first thought when you said it was cool. Now
I haven't
see
seen it, but here's my thoughts.
Giovanni weighs in.
Oh, my God.
The great Giovanni. Hey, I have to say it as a spoiler, but only for people who have seen Thor the Dark World. And then he goes on to explain what that means.
Email both of us. I think he might have overthought that one a little bit.
David Mead weighs in with Brian's accusation of the Matt Damon cameo being a spoiler worthy are nothing more than a poor excuse for a see, you did it too. You do it too, as Brian would say.
So I'm not wrong.
I saw Thor opening night, enjoyed it quite a bit, and for the life of me, couldn't even remember where Damon popped up before you mentioned it.
What I am getting is that a lot of people didn't know it was him.
Peter Samuelson writes, as much as it pains me to agree with the smug one, I would rather have not had the cameo spoiled for me. And then my favorite one of all was Manscady8. He writes, it's Thor, who gives a rat fuck? Now this is a final tally. 15 said that it did spoil it and ruin it a little bit for them. And 19 said that it did not bother them.
So if you think you're spoiling for 44% of the audience, that's okay with you?
No, it's not. Okay, and then we're going to get off past this subject forever. Mm-hmm. But here's what really, really bothers me about this whole thing. And I brought it up off air, but I don't think it made it to the show. Brian, listen to me. Mm-hmm. You called me out and said you shouldn't have said that.
I did.
And I immediately said, all right, so let's mark it and cut it. And you said, no,
that is
must
true.
Keep it in. So
true.
Really, in reality, you're the one who is responsible for the spoiling. I initiated it, but then I tried to backpedal.
You're oversimplifying a little bit because you went quite a far ways down that road of, it's not a spoiler, it's not a spoiler, only after a lot of conversation, you're like, fine, take it out.
Matt Damon's name had only been mentioned once at that point, and I knew, because I edit, and I understand what Logan has to go through if we are going to scrub it from the record, and once it was mentioned a few more times, I'm like, all right, fuck it, it's over now. But before we went too far down that road, I said, all right, let's take it out to not ruin things. One guy actually suggested that I ruined one of his rare moments to be able to go see a movie with his wife because he has a 4-year-old kid, and I just ruined his entire like 6 months of movie going experience by saying that.
Now,
all right, I'm done. You're not listening to me anyways because that was.
I'm going to ask you a question.
Funny little aside that I just told you about a true story about a person saying that I ruined. He has a 4-year-old child, and I ruined the movie. Not for his wife though. His wife didn't hear the show, so she got to enjoy Thor. But the entire experience was fucked,
ruined.
And he gets to see one movie every 6 months because he has a 4-year-old child. So I just ruined everything for him. Yeah.
Do you feel better now? You shouldn't.
I feel pretty good.
Now, I my first instinct was, he'll understand this. My second instinct was, oh, actually, no, he won't understand this at all. Then I'm like, well, he's not a moron. But then, you two are this going. You realize the self-selecting sample that emails you their opinion. They're people who are tend to be on your side, or at least know that you're going to.
It was the only thing that we could do because I don't go on Twitter. I don't go on the old FB over there.
Well, I can go on our website. These are people not going to my site, going to your site. I want an email. Your email. They're going to the Anderson and Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Two people.
Comments.
Five comments.
Only five.
Five for five.
I got close to four.
Five for five. It's a self-selecting sample, Anderson.
No. Because anyone can email me. Anyone.
And the people who decided.
You're suggesting that only people that like me
people
can
who thought both or all three of us would see it. Five for five. All did not want the spoiler.
Uh-huh.
Actually, the one who was more the one who's the funniest was Will McPherson said, "I have not seen Thor 3. I have never seen a Thor movie. I will never see a Thor movie. Thor is gay." So maybe Will makes a good.
Will's
point.
Will's a funny guy. He emails me quite
maybe
a bit.
Will makes a good point.
All right, here we go.
Jonathan Bueno. I'm so disappointed by Anderson.
Uh-huh. But be disappointed with Brian, because I tried to. I said, "All right, you know what? If you feel that way, Brian, maybe you're right. Let's pull it from the record." Mm-hmm. And then Brian started to say, "No, we will keep it in to show the listeners that you had bad instincts for a moment."
Michael P. Gowdy agrees and says, "I'm also surprised at how infuriated I got when Logan said the Guardians of the Galaxy movies are far better. I'm fucked to the no."
I don't know why that would make him so angry.
Not angry, infuriated. He was overcome with fury.
Personal preference, but
it's a personal.
Okay, we get. Do you have any more fun?
I have nothing.
Okay, let's move past it then. Let's move past it.
We flick fest and flicks.
Matt Damon. Hey, he's in this movie called Euro Trip.
Oh, hey, tell me more about it. Is it good? Do you like?
It's hilarious, and it wasn't really marketed that way, and you weren't supposed to really know that he was in it until you saw it. But he actually showed up on I think my top five, maybe your top five cameos.
That would make me mad if that had been spoiled though. Matt Damon in Euro Trip, because it's actually really funny.
It is really funny, but it's still funny even if you know it's him. That's still funny. Knowing that it's him and Thor or not doesn't make it
funny
or not.
But if I knew
it
was him, then someone had overly shared with me and it would just remind me of how much I hate that person.
I guess it's okay because a lot of people have had an opportunity to see the old Euro Trip now because it's been out for a while, whereas Thor had been out for 1 week. Okay. Let's move past it.
Let's move past. Flick fashion time. Time to confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. Oh, I got something else to confess to you, Anderson. You know what today is?
Oh, fuck.
Infusion Day!
Dude, you need to, all right. So Brian has ace bandage around his hand that denotes that that he's got a little infusion going on, which makes him like jacked to the tits. And it's tan color, like it's flesh colored.
Blends right in.
So I didn't
even
notice
it in the studio.
I ask you this: can you request hot pink or hot lime green?
Oh, to really stand out.
Yeah, just so I can know, so I don't have to be taken aback.
It's good.
Can you please do that?
I feel like I've done a really good job in not interrupting so far, and also.
All right. Let's flick fast.
That's good. Hey, remember when I made that joke 2 seconds ago that you liked?
Let's flick fast,
let's
you fuck.
Confess the flicks we've seen in the past week. I was advised to see a film. I wasn't assigned, but I was advised to watch a film. Mm-hmm. Short film.
Very
short,
yeah, cool.
Scant 40 minutes.
Sweet.
Film, which I did not watch. Instead.
Not terrible.
I streamed on Netflix, Long Shot, a short movie. Long Shot is the name of the title. Directed by Jacob La Mendola and starring Juan Catalan. Uh-huh. Juan Catalan. This is a documentary that Anderson. How did you stumble upon this?
Tyler White told me about it, and he led
Dodger fans
with the, I guess you can call it a twist if you don't know the story, which I had never heard the story before. And I'm going to ask you, speaking of spoilers, not to reveal who ends up showing up in this.
It's a tough one.
Because it's one of, did you see it coming or did you know the story?
No, I didn't know it at all. Luckily, I was able to avoid it. But when you click on when you click on the, just on the movie
it's just
on the
TV
website.
Show.
No, when you click on the movie on the website, like on the Netflix site, you're like, oh, add to my queue or add to my list.
Uh-huh.
That famous person's face.
Oh, really?
Like it's amongst the
on
faces.
My Roku TV, my sweet, beautiful TCL TV. It doesn't do that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I knew that.
I think
this person was
going to
show up. Okay, good. Because you already knew though, because Netflix gave it away. But it was one of the biggest left turns.
I did. I saw it after the fact.
Okay, after the fact.
Yeah, so I didn't know.
So
but
you
it,
got
but
to
I,
experience.
I could see how someone could stumble upon it.
You got to experience. I think I would have almost got whiplash from the left turn that just comes.
That
the
is
tone.
A,
the
yeah.
tone changes so quickly.
Yeah.
And
it's well done.
Yeah.
Let's set the table.
Okay. Let's do it.
This is about Juan Catalan, who is implicated. He's a suspect. He's a prime suspect. He's charged, actually. So he's charged for the murder of a 16-year-old witness to a murder of his cousin. Was that what it was? Or this girl who was murdered, 16-year-old girl who was murdered, and he's fingered for the crime. She was a witness in the trial of
his cousin
who killed somebody. So naturally, he's a suspect because it's his. They live close by. Can't account for where he was. The girl testified against his. Testified against his cousin, and they live super close. If I didn't mention that. So anyhow, sorry, we're working on headphones.
Yeah,
hey,
I'm sorry.
When you move that, it's
trying
really
to be professional,
good.
But it's really distracting.
Oh, we're good.
Yeah, it's this input cable. I think it's this cable. Mm-hmm. If we were to replace this cable.
You know what?
Cable.
I actually mixed up a cable that looks just like it. It's probably.
You have it?
Yeah.
We might be able to fix this.
Quick pause.
Like, we're going to pause?
Yeah, because I'm describing the film.
It is.
Like,
it is
like an idiot.
Terribly distracting. Sorry. I should be able to push through it, but.
It wasn't a problem last week, was it?
It's been on and off, but no, I don't remember it having any issues last week. When I'm messing with this, it really seems to make a difference. So I imagine that it's this guy.
Because I accidentally put these two cables together.
Can't believe what a beating these things take. It's not like they're being trucked around. Check one, two, check.
Oh, we got two channels.
Nice. Beautiful. Oh, dude, we're fucked.
Damn it.
Kidding.
Really?
No. It's great. It's beautiful. All right. And we're back. I identified the issue.
Oh, yeah, we are back.
I identified the issue mid-show, and Logan leapt to his feet, and on the fly, we are fixed. No more distract. Well, I'll be distracted by Brian
by me,
and his bandage and his infusion, but... All right, so back to
the description of Long Shot. So I'll just start at the beginning. Logan, you can cut out whatever you want to cut
what?
Out.
What? No, not the beginning.
Well, okay. Juan Catalan.
Yeah. So he's a murderer.
He's charged in the murder of a 16-year-old girl who testified in the murder trial that his cousin, Juan Catalan's cousin, perpetrated and put him away. So naturally, he's a prime suspect and eventually gets charged with the murder.
He also fits the description of the sketch from the one... witness that was there.
Speaking of sketch, it's a little sketch the way they did everything, and there's information revealed at literally the very end that I was like, I could have used more of this. Like, they should have front loaded and made it a little long. It didn't need to be 40 minutes. What I'm saying is, I liked it. I would have actually liked a 60 minute piece. You know, they could have front loaded a little more about the two guys that. The two cops that did things they shouldn't have done.
I was really impressed that they did not try and stroll this out into like a 90-minute feature, like even an 85-minute feature, and try and. Because it's rare that you see a movie that's so succinct and nice, and you know, you're right, you're absolutely right. It could have even been longer because it was that good. But I applaud the fact that they didn't go for the. You know, they had those discussions like, hey, guys, we can make this into a 90-minute movie.
Right.
And I'm glad they didn't.
And the prosecutor character, of course, there's a female prosecutor who's never lost a murder case. And she, you know, it's a great example of, we all know these people in our lives, Anderson, who they're the hammer and it's everything. To them, everything looks like a nail. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, well, he's guilty. And they're like, well, what about this evidence? She's like, that's totally explainable. And what about this? And as we, the audience, come to feel a certain way, she goes, of course, the other way, because she's a prosecutor and she's a hammer and everything to her looks like a nail.
Yeah, but everything to the defense looks like an innocent victim,
but
as well.
I like to think that we, as the audience, are hopefully, you know, learning things that are facts and sort of, you know, having our minds having our untethered minds, you know, sway towards the truth. And she was doggedly pulling against what
she was
seemed to be the tide.
The closest thing to an antagonist in this movie. It's a scant 40 minutes, maybe 4 minutes, and it's like the quickest 40 minutes you're going to spend if you do sit down
no
and
narrator.
Watch this thing.
Talking to the camera.
All right to right. A lot of talking heads, but it works. It's fantastic. It's a
powerful scene. I reacted kind of emotionally to it when. So he, we can say his alibi, right? His alibi is.
Dodger
you mentioned,
game.
Yeah. His alibi is, I was at the Dodgers game that night. It comes to him later. He's like, oh, wait a minute. I'm doing the math on the date. This is 2002.
Yeah, like that's an example of what a bitch this woman was. Like, right. You know, because I think that he was at the Dodger game like May 3rd
12th.
Or something. May 12th. Yeah, the day after my birthday. And, they accuse him of this, right? They come knocking on his door like August. And they're like, where were you the night of May 12th? And I'm pretty sure the prosecutor was like, you know, he doesn't even know who he was.
But this
he,
is before,
like, how do you,
this is really
you
before Google calendars. And, you know, people didn't have a lot, divide, there were no,
it was 2000,
there were no iPhones.
That, 2003.
Yeah, 2002, whatever it was. It's very understandable. He would not remember initially where he was.
Absolutely.
May 12th.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have no idea what I was, where. If you give me a date 3 months ago, I might be able to track it down,
we'll
but there's a good
phone.
Chance. It's like, I don't know.
So Juan was
and he remembers, oh, I was
at the Dodgers game with his daughter, and he turns out to be, he's a huge Dodgers fan. He's a baseball fan.
Lawyers.
And he knows you know, all the players, and he can remember the games with remarkable clarity. He's like, yeah, I was there. Gagne blew the save. The score was this, the blah, blah, blah. He gives a remarkable amount of details.
Yeah.
He's at the game.
It was impressive.
And, of course, he can't provide any proof, and thus the sort of plot unfolds. But he did go with his, at that time, five-year-old daughter, and she's called to the stand to testify that they were there and that he bought her ice cream and things, and she's five and a half or six at this point.
Not the most credible witness.
It is heartbreaking to watch. He's crying the whole time just because... your daughter on a stand in your murder trial.
Yeah.
Like that, oh,
pretty
man,
intense.
That's intense. It was a bit of a dusty moment. It was
and they
hard
also
to,
got
hard
a real hot shot lawyer for him who was like a TV guy. And that guy
no,
was
he had, known him from before. Didn't he defend his cousin or something? He had known. He called him a rock star or something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, he was a rock star. He was...
he may have been a TV guy. I don't
he
know,
was a TV
but
guy.
I remember
like
there's some personal
clips of
connection.
Him like doing TV. And
yeah.
Stuff. So cool.
The only thing that maybe undercut the drama a little bit was that eventually it's revealed that it's a preliminary hearing. There's no jury, and
it would have been more sensational had there been a jury for sure.
But it didn't ruin it.
It's a documentary. It's not like they wrote it out here.
Yeah.
And the twist that happens in the middle that no one would see coming unless you had heard this story before, it really is just a sharp left turn. And I don't remember ever experiencing, even though I knew it was coming, it was still like just, and it works. It's so,
oh, you knew it was coming, did you?
Well, yeah, because Tyler, fuckhead that he is, like he sold me the movie on the fact that, you know, he led with this person that shows up in the movie.
Yeah, I can
and
see.
And it's the perfect, like, of all the comedians and actors and everyone out there, like, he would, this person that ends up showing up in the middle of this, and he's in it for a good 10 minutes of the film.
It's almost jarring the way it cuts the tension.
Yeah, it's jarring. It absolutely is. And, like, I can't think of anyone better short of, like there's really, if he was cast to play this role in this documentary, like, if it was, like, if you could somehow, like, be God and cast documentaries and make them, create them, like, he was, he'd be the perfect one.
There he is. Pee Wee Herman. I mean,
Paul Rubens would be busy masturbating in the row behind
him. In the bathroom, that's right.
But it's a fantastic little 40-minute.
Did the judge character seem kind of slow to you?
She's dumb as fuck.
She's too dumb. Yeah. Like, I was actually very disappointed. I'm like,
I don't understand all of these pings and the cell phone technology. So she essentially just, I don't want to give it away.
She had a lot of trouble with letters and numbers. I mean, not adding numbers, like just numbers.
Kind
of
shocking.
Just numbers that existed.
Shocking and scary.
And
the whole
by her own admission, by the way, by her own admission, because she's talking to the camera. And then at one point, another shocking moment when she goes, I took the tapes home and I played them for my children. And I asked them, is this the voice of a guilty man? I'm like, what? You're a judge.
I was commenting. I was in the wife's ear when that was happening. I'm like, if this woman's ever my judge, in any case, the fact that she was just admitting that on camera,
that's right,
too.
Of her own volition. Yeah, I was shocked.
There were little kids too. I think she like talked about how old they were, like 5 and 7 or something.
They were young. That was shocking.
Our justice system is not all that it's cracked up to
it's
be.
Come
I'm
a
afraid.
Long way. All right, Long Shot. You can stream it on Netflix if you're a subscriber, and it is a good, quick 40-minute watch.
Yeah, you can watch it with a significant other. Everyone's going to enjoy this one. It's a fantastic one. And my mom won it because she hates this mysterious person that we keep skirting and dancing around. She hates that person.
Really?
She doesn't seem very hateful.
Well, actually, I take that back.
My mom
hates
a lot of people. My mom hates a lot of people. She would hate me if she didn't know me. Like, if she listened to the show and she had no idea who I was,
like,
she would absolutely hate me.
Crass.
Yeah. Brazen. Boisterous.
Spoiling.
No, she wouldn't say that. She's a smart woman.
Freely.
I saw a film, Brian. Oh, I saw a movie. I had to make a choice. It was a tough choice. It was a bit of a sacrifice, you might say. Either Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Illinois, which I'm going to be very upset if you did see that, or The Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Oh.
All right, so I had two good choices. I would have seen both had it been a different week and I hadn't been assigned something called Nature Fucking Boy.
Nature Boy, woo!
Stop it. But I chose The Killing of a Sacred Deer mainly because
so excited.
Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, which I really want to see, is one of my most anticipated. I will be seeing that for next week for sure. That one is being hoarded by two theaters that I've banned.
Oh, yeah.
It's only playing in two theaters in L.A.
One great theater.
And it's Brian's theater. And I knew that there was a chance that you may have seen it, and that's going to hurt me.
No, I've not. I'm waiting for you.
Is that a lie?
Well, obviously it is. I didn't know you hadn't seen it.
Well, I mean, but have you seen it or not?
No, I've not seen it.
Oh, that doesn't shock me. Okay. Feel bad.
I don't like some good movies.
We'll hit it next week.
I don't like some
good movies. We'll hit that. Killing of a Sacred Deer. This is a film that is going to be very difficult for me to talk about at length or detail. Yorgos Lanthimos.
How do I know that name?
He is the guy that made a brilliant film named Dogtooth that first made me fall in love with this man and say, I will see anything that he does.
Dogtooth is a good movie. You assigned it to me to be disturbing, and there are parts of it that
there's parts that are very disturbing.
Quite shocking, but good movie.
He's got like an underlying theme there, like a family is an island, and it's about this dad that keeps... This is before Wolfpack,
the
too.
The Lobster.
Brian. The Dogtooth. It's before the Wolfpack movie came out, of the documentary about those kids that dad like kept them all in the New York apartment, didn't let them leave the house until they finally did.
Documentary.
It wasn't that good, but they're making an actual narrative. Ooh. Which could be okay. And then so this dad in Dogtooth just keeps all of his kids inside the house.
Yep.
That's probably his most realistic.
And a lot of emotional manipulation, mental manipulation too, with like, oh, you can go when your canine teeth fall out.
When your dog tooth falls out, your adult dog tooth falls out.
And he explains airplanes as like toys that are flying through the sky.
Yeah, because they're like, well, what are those things if there's nothing outside of our house? What are those things in the sky? And he's like, oh, those are just little toys that people throw by. He says, don't ever talk to go near a cat. That's kittens right. will kill you. So a kitten doesn't do so well later in that movie because they see it as a threat. Yeah. Very sad moment. But that's probably his most realistic film that I've seen. His other one was The Alps, which had a great premise, but did not pan out. And then, of course, The Lobster, which is his biggest film, his biggest commercial success thus far.
Strange.
I liked it. I didn't love it. And
parts that I enjoyed.
The first half. And now, here's what Yorgos is good at, and that's his rules are there really aren't any as far as logic or reality go. Like, he kind of creates his own universe. It's almost like an alternate universe with The Lobster being... he builds it around scenarios that I can only imagine. He imagines the scenario that he would like to see people reacting to. And he doesn't give a fuck that that's an impossible scenario, which is with The Lobster, you got to find a lifelong partner within, you know, you hit a certain age. If you still haven't found the love of your life, you got to go to this hotel and you have like a week to find a partner. And if you don't find one, you choose whatever animal and you'll be that for the rest of your life. And he does it in the way that his direction is suffocating and tedious at times because it's very deadpan and everyone speaks very measured. And so here we are now with the sacred killing of the killing of a sacred deer. And it's starring biggest cast so far. He's got Nicole Kidman in here, Colin Farrell, and Alicia Silverstone is back. Mm-hmm. She essentially has a cameo, but it's not a secret. So don't give me shit.
She's also the second listed person on the website.
Correct. Now, I'm a little disappointed that Colin Farrell is in this because he was in The Lobster. I've already seen him do this. He does a slightly different version of what he was doing in The Lobster. He's even more measured. And the whole. So Colin Farrell is married to Nicole Kidman, and they have these two kids, like 5 years old and he's probably like 7 years old and like 13-year-old daughter. Right? 13-year-old daughter, 7-year-old son named Bob. And they live a very sterile existence in this very nice house. He's a heart surgeon. It actually opens up with a beating heart in a surgery. It's an actual real heart beating, unless it's the best CGI I've ever seen or best robotics I've ever seen. I'm assuming it might have been an animal or something. I meant to research that, but that's what it opens with. He almost has an overture too. This guy, he might be the most unique director to himself working with the exception of possibly David Lynch, but there's no way you can't see a few of this guy's movies and then see like one scene from any of his other movies and be able to identify him. Like, he is very identifiable in his style. So it opens up almost with an overture. There's probably a good 60 seconds of just black screen and like, you know, this four string quartet or, you know, really like moody music. Yeah. And then it opens up with a very, very tight shot of a beating heart and it just pulls back. And like, it starts you off kind of manipulating you and making you feel a little bit uneasy. The movie continues where Colin Farrell, who is this heart surgeon or he's a surgeon, and he has this friend, this 18-year-old kid is his friend. And the kid is played by Barry Keoghan. You would recognize him immediately as the young boy, the young son on the boat from Dunkirk.
Oh my gosh!
Remember two boys? Mm-hmm. He's got a very unique look, and he steals every scene he's in. He is what you think of when you think of the killing of a sacred deer. Once you see this movie, if you ever do, he's gonna be the lasting impression. And unfortunately, you don't get nearly as much of him as you do Colin Farrell. Colin Farrell's fine, but he's playing this very measured. So. He's hanging out with his 18-year-old kid. You're trying to piece things together. Like, why is he hanging out with this kid? And then you learn not too far in that he knows the kid because the kid's father was one of his patients at one time. And then you catch him lying to his wife when he's telling his wife about his friend, who's this kid. And he says, you know, his father, I knew his father, but he died in a car accident, died instantly. But, you know, that's not true necessarily. By the time Yorgos gets to where he's going with this whole movie and the theme, it takes about an hour to get there before he has a setup of what's really at stake here. And
deliberate.
No,
the pacing is like not deliberate.
There's really,
sounds like it's very,
it's intriguing.
Measured.
It's very intriguing. And I was definitely trying to, you know, invested, and I wasn't really enjoying I wasn't having any, no laughs. There was no laughs. And no, when you do laugh in a Yorgos film,
aren't terribly funny, the ones that I've seen.
When you do laugh, it's usually pretty dark. All right, the second half of this movie, once the stakes are laid, and they're pretty high stakes on a personal level, it becomes very humorous for me. I understand that I don't have a regular sense of humor, that my sense of humor tends to be a little darker than most people. If you don't like dark humor, if you don't like being stressed out about the well-being of people, characters that you've grown to know in a movie, I could see if you're a parent, this bothering you. It didn't bother me, which I'm pleased to report. This did not bother me. I just found the absurdity of it to be humorous. I laughed numerous times. And like I said, this kid is like he's just fantastic. He seems like he's on the spectrum, like he's got Asperger's or something. I really, really like this movie, but I know, so I'm going to try and steer people either into it or away from it, because there's a lot of people are going to hate this movie. A lot of people would love it.
People who liked Dogtooth or The Lobster or
absolutely
both?
If okay. you like those two movies, you're definitely going to like.
So you know what,
and
for
me. But I think a lot of people haven't seen either one of those movies, you know?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think a lot of people have seen Yorgos. If you're not familiar, what are the chances you're going to like this?
If you're not familiar
you're
casual, with them, who knows?
Average moviegoer.
Who knows?
Not if casual, you're an average, the average film listener.
Look, you got to have a really dark sense of humor. This is not listed as a comedy at all, but it definitely is. Kind of like Hannibal. Mm-hmm. Hannibal definitely was a comedy at times. They brought David Mamet in to punch it up and put some zingers right. in there. You're supposed to be laughing when he's eating his own brain. Right. And that's funny.
It's like I tell you, but it tastes very good.
And what ultimately happens with Colin Farrell and his fan, and it gets disturbing as shit. It's got elements of prisoners in there. Mm. Remember Prisoners?
Yeah, of course.
But you know, I've heard reports of people being very disturbed, very put off. I can tell you the audience that I saw it with. They just wanted to talk about the supernatural characteristic of, and what this character was supposed to be. Was he supposed to be God? No, it's a Yorgos film where like rules don't apply, right. like actual reality does not apply. So he sets up like these scenarios, like I said, that would never happen in the real world. But this is my kind of movie, especially that second half. It sings for me. It was fucking hilarious and just off-putting and
the way your face is lighting up as you describe how funny it was leads me to believe that no one else will find it funny.
Yeah, that could be the case.
Not no one else. Few people.
I think few people are going to enjoy this, but I don't want to say it's well-directed because it's such a style. Like it's suffocating. It's just like the little kids, like they all talk. Mm. You know, like very measured, like the lead kid that I was talking about that's so great that steals every scene he's in, Barry Keoghan. Like, he's talking. So, Colin Farrell invites his kid into his house, right? Like, you know, in the first half of the film, and he meets his wife and his kids for the first time. And he takes a shine to his 13-year-old daughter, right. who's like a pretty, well to do little girl. And he starts, you know, there's a scene with Barry Keoghan, Will Ferrell's friend. 18-year-old friend sitting with his daughter in his room, just the two of them, and his Colin Farrell's son is also in there. So it's just the kids. And Barry says, "Do you mind if I smoke?" And little boy Bob says, "No, you can't smoke. You're gonna get in trouble." And then his daughter says, "No, you can't, because you can tell that she's kind of got a crush on him now." And he goes, "Yeah, okay." And he lights up. She's like, "Just do it by the window." So he starts smoking. He's like, "Yeah, I started smoking for six months ago. I wish I hadn't. I'm addicted now. It's too late." I mean, that's like how he reads the entire everything. You just have to understand. Like, everything's just matter of fact. There's no sing-songy.
He's not embellishing the lines.
There's like, it's almost like no acting. It's just straightforward. Nicole Kidman was fantastic in this as well. She probably had the most life of any. One of their, I just remembered. I had fucking notes. You learn about their sex rituals early on, and he likes to have her lay down in various states of unconsciousness, anesthesia-wise, general anesthesia fully out.
Totally normal.
And she just gets naked and she just lays there, and then he has his way with her. So there's some Cosby sex in there, odd child friendship, a horrific secret. Oh, I almost forgot about the secret. Oh. Okay, Colin Farrell tells, like, he's trying to get information out of his youngest son.
Okay.
So he's like, "Yeah, you got to tell me, Bob. You probably have some secrets. You got to tell me your secrets. Well, do you have any secrets?" And Bob's like, "No, I don't have any secrets." He's like 7-year-old son. And Colin Farrell says, "Well, I have a secret, and I've never told this to anyone." And then he tells them something that had to do with his father. And it's unbelievable. It's very off-putting and uncomfortable. But in retrospect, kind of funny. This is not. I enjoyed The Killing of a Sacred Deer very much. Enjoy yourself if you think you can deal. I want to say more.
I don't know if I can.
I want to say more, but
it's intimidating.
Can I say Sophie's Choice in slow motion, kind of like drawn out?
Yeah, I mean, you're painting a picture.
Yeah. There's nothing funny about Sophie's Choice, but if you're familiar with that choice, it's examined here and how people might react if they were all in on it. I don't think I'm saying too much.
No, but I don't know what you're going after. I understand.
But there's a lot of self-serving here. There's a lot of desperation, but it's not like panic desperation. It's very measured desperation, which you will only find in this movie. People pitching themselves and went, oh, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. I want to see this again.
Limited release, I assume?
I would imagine.
1,000 theaters.
I spent a ton of time. No, I would think less than that, possibly. Killing of a Sacred Deer.
It's everywhere in the theaters.
All right, go ahead.
I saw a documentary that I signed you. So I was so excited about it.
Mm-hmm. This is a TV show, by the way.
Oh, and Long Shot isn't?
No, Long Shot's a film on Netflix.
Yeah.
Foxflix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It doesn't have commercials. They don't bleep out cuss words, Brian.
Oh, you saw bleeped out cuss words?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. I saw the full version.
Oh.
I don't know. Maybe you saw a TV.
Were the commercials?
TV general audience. No.
Where'd you see it?
I watched the thing on the app or whatever. On the, I don't know what I did. I forget.
ESPN Go?
It was either that or it was okay. It was through my Roku somehow.
I just pushed record. It was on demand on DirecTV. Okay. We're talking about Nature Boy.
Nature Boy. Woo!
Don't do that every time. Woo! Please. We're talking about Ric Flair.
Hey, if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man.
Mm-hmm. I know next to nothing about Ric Flair, and now I know a lot.
As did I. I was a WWF at the time fan, and Ric Flair was a famous WCW wrestler, and later, there was another one. Whatever.
Bill Burr TNA, talks about Ric Flair. Now,
WCW.
If you told me he was a guitar player before I heard Bill Burr talking about him, I would have believed you. Like I didn't know anything about him.
But even I knew of Ric Flair because he was famous enough that he transcended. I didn't know anyone else in those. So. Back it up.
I didn't know anyone in the big league. So you know, other than Hulk Hogan.
Well, yeah, the film addresses that WWF was looked at as kind of like for kids, for families. Like it was big. Obviously, everyone knows Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, and it's more culturally present. It was on national TV every Saturday or Sunday, or whatever it was. And the WCW, when he wrestled there, was a little more regional. They called it regional. They called it blue collar. They called it for men. I always thought it was kind of cheap. Like I always watched it and I'm like, I don't want this because
you like polished, shiny like polished things. Yeah.
Well, keep in mind, I was also 9 years old. That's so yes, I did like polished, shiny things. And I wasn't into the regional WCW. I also didn't know where would I have found it. I was in, you know, the Bay Area. So I naturally gravitated towards WWF, but I was aware of Ric Flair because he's this famous figure who transcended.
He was the Hulk Hogan of that.
He was, and also a very respected wrestler. Hogan himself comes on at one point. He's like,
I can never be.
He's like, Flair's way better. Ten times better than me.
Gives. He just gives. Yep. He just gives so much.
An unlikely superstar. So he has sort of some crooked teeth and what I would consider to be a horrible accent. That is not that sort of, you know, Hulk Hogan, that training and the prayers and the vitamins, or what's your man reading these tapes? Ooh, yeah. You know, he had that affected way of speaking. Ric Flair just kind of sounds like, yeah, he screams and sounds like a normal dude.
You and I know somebody who is a lot like this guy.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Former guest on the show.
No.
Nope. Said too much?
No.
Okay.
No.
Oh.
Could pull the plug on the show if they wanted, though.
Oh.
Very similar.
I never thought about that.
Very, very similar. Yeah. So, his whole bit, Ric Flair's whole bit, and I think a lot of people are very familiar with Ric Flair, and I would imagine we have a lot of listeners who love Ric Flair. But his whole bit, which was actually opposite of how I would try and sell myself if I was a wrestler, it was braggadocious. I have all the money in the world.
And private jets. He wore the robes with the sequins and the feathers and the boas.
He was kind of like if Greco were to become Gecko were to become a wrestler, like
it was Gecko
from Wall Street.
Oh yeah, he's as though like
greed is good.
Imagine a glam rocker decided not to sing but instead to wrestle.
Yeah,
it's kind of like that.
But his whole thing was like, I'm living the life you wish you could be living, but you're not. Five women a night. I got my own limo, did booze. And I think my favorite part of this whole documentary, and it was very enjoyable, and I for a subject that I couldn't really care that much less about, he was a compelling character. He's interviewed throughout the entire thing.
Speaking of twists, I didn't see there was a personal twist in the middle that I did not see coming. I didn't know much about
towards the end, I thought.
Yeah, sorry, middle, the second half, yes.
We'll get there in a second. I loved his candor, how he would talk about... I think it was actually, we heard it secondhand from his wife, his first wife, but she said like he would come home from like being on the road for like a week or two, and he would sit there with the kids, like as being a dad now and a family man, like I can't imagine doing this. He would come home, he would sit there with the kids for maybe like a half hour, and he would look at her and he would say, "I hate this. I just hate this."
He was gone for like 340 days a year,
and he would just get up and he would leave. And it turned out that he would leave down the street to like Hart's house, where another wrestler lived down the street, and that's where his next wife.
Oh, yeah, and he was
next wife was staying. So he's just going down the street to bang another broad.
And he drank all the time.
10 drinks a day minimum is what he claims, and I tend to believe him. And I was actually really happy that they weren't doing it's almost like a trope where it's like, okay, now where does he fall? You know, where does it all
go
wrong?
How far does it fall?
Because he's sitting here, you know, he's now like in present day Ric Flair talking about all these things that he abused and whatnot. It's like, all right,
he's kind of saying with a smile too.
Yeah.
Not kind of. He's saying, he's like, hey,
he loved
it.
He enjoyed it. And I was waiting for it. And then, of course, it had to do almost like they're mandated to do. Like, you can't air this, him saying that drinking and partying doesn't actually turn to bad things. You got to
put in
a negative side.
Some tragedy or something.
And there was a very tragic moment that comes.
Yeah.
And he's definitely at fault.
Yep.
Absolutely, from being a horrible father. But
definitely a huge contributing factor, maybe the biggest contributing factor to this tragedy. So you have to talk about side by side with The Sheik, the documentary The Sheik.
I like The Sheik more.
See, I like this more. Mm-hmm. And I liked them both. I did like The Sheik. And keep in mind, this is coming from... So not only was I a WWF fan more than WCW, there were... We all had these things between 8 and 10 years old, certain things that were extremely important in our lives for some stupid reason. WWF was one of the most important things in my life.
It's
as an 8-year-old.
Absurd.
I loved it. Yeah. I woke up
still
to
is.
Watch it every Saturday
morning.
Like,
when you watched, your two favorite things are music, as far as I can tell, music and wrestling. And that seems to be all...
Currently?
Yeah. It seems to be like
a wrestling match in
most
20 years.
All of the documentaries you watch are related to
that's good.
Based
on
music.
The documentaries I watch.
I really do think that you're like, what are my interests?
That's funny.
I want to watch documentaries that are tailored to my interests. Like, if I were to do that, it would all be like punk rock documentaries, which I've seen a number of them, and like marine biology documentaries, or documentaries about making
which
movies.
Which you all see a number of.
I don't... How often do I come in here saying, dude, you got to see this marine biology documentary about sharks?
I can think of two off the top of my head.
What?
Telecom and the Dolphins.
The Cove. The Cove did win.
And the Cave Forgotten Dreams.
Telecom is not the name of it. It was called Blackfish.
I know.
Blackfish.
I couldn't think of it right away.
Cave of Forgotten Dreams is a cave, not a fucking water cave. Dude.
So I did, I like this a little better than The Sheik. And I think part of the reason, maybe this is not fair to The Sheik, but part of the reason the documentary about the Iron Sheik is I find the whole persona of The Sheik these days extremely put on and extremely tiresome. Ironically put on, because he's a wrestler and it's the whole thing is put on, you know, air or put on the persona for the camera. But the whole thing where he's like a celebrity on Twitter and he's like always tweeting, I follow him. I mean, he's funny, but it's quite clearly, and they even allude to it in the documentary, someone else doing it. Like,
I saw it happening before my eyes.
Yeah. So
I saw his handler wheel him in, and I don't know how much I should be saying, but like he was standing behind me tweeting for The Sheik.
Yeah.
In another room.
So
it was very upsetting.
Whereas The Sheik is this sort of sad pawn puppet in this whole thing of his resurgent popularity. But Ric Flair is still Ric Flair. Like we see him at the end of the documentary. He's still like, yeah, you know, living the dream or living the life or whatever it is. It's like fucking Ric Flair is, you know, he's a creation. He's his own thing and he's true to himself. Where, and again, this is drawing outside the documentary, but I found him to be a more interesting character.
The version I saw, like the director came on and explained to me what I was going to watch. And then, yeah, like after a commercial break, the director's like there talking to the screen, explaining what I'm going to see next. It's like, what am I doing? What has Brian got me doing over here?
I don't like
this. So who do you suggest this to? Who do you recommend this to? It's a brand new documentary on 30 for 30.
If you saw,
you can't go wrong with 30 for 30.
If you saw The Sheik and liked it, this is very similar in its arc. It's very similar in its period of time. Like they're contemporaries.
And it's well told. They use animation in a very, you know, fun, smooth, goes down smooth way. Mm-hmm. Makes things funnier than they were. He's a larger than life character.
And it is funny.
And for somebody like me, it actually hit the spot because I know nothing about this fucking guy and I don't really know anything about wrestling because I don't like to feel like a snob. And that's how I feel when it's on in front of me.
Well, it's interesting. I feel like from our perspectives, me as a former wrestling fan and you as someone who can care less, couldn't care less. We got kind of all the bases covered here.
Yeah.
This is enjoyable.
What about all the bases? What about like my, let's go back to my mom.
Unless you
my mom
aggressively hate wrestling.
Yeah, I don't think my mom. But I really appreciated how they used the juxtaposition of the Hulk and him and showed how he was like a real life character and like edgy, right. And the Hulk was like the safe version.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of examples out there.
Why Steve Austin wasn't on there, or The Rock, or any of those guys.
They were not contemporaries. In. They were decades apart.
Yeah, but still, like,
although I guess they were kind of overlapping towards the end, because they made a thing about how Ric Flair wasn't smart with his money, and yeah. He came back to wrestle as an older gentleman and kind of shoehorned him in there.
What was creepy is like you don't realize it when you're watching in real time, and not that I was watching them, but what I mean is like, you know, you see Hulk through the years, and they almost like a smash cut of like Hulk and Flair wrestling separately, not right. each other, and then by the time they actually wrestled each other, they just looked like two old oiled men. It was creepy, especially Hulk, and he wins the match, and like he's just all sweaty and old and wrinkly and brown
and tan. It's like, oh, you look leathery.
His hair was all like dreaded from the sweat.
But bald and balding.
Yeah, terrible. Not
a good look.
Not the Hulk from Rocky III.
No, not Thunderlips. The ultimate male.
All right.
Coming up next. You ready, Lou? Coming up next, we will talk the top five recast roles, male roles, movies that started off with one actor, had to replace with another. Next. Anderson, I assume that little Atticus sleeps with a sound machine or something to that effect.
Oh, yeah.
Do you sleep with a sound machine?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you always, or is it like once Atticus got on, you're like, that's a good idea?
Ever since I lived in an apartment, I've been having white noise on so I can hear my neighbors.
My follow-up question was, is it white noise, or do you go for ocean waves? I go for ocean waves.
Ocean waves are distracting, dude, though. I go for the hardcore. You want to hear?
No, I know what white noise sounds like. There we go.
Yeah. Or I could do this. It's slightly different, but a little higher pitched.
Oh, like static. That's actually...
Yeah. Makes you dream good.
Does it? Yeah. Wow!
I can't hear
my
fucking cat meowing. It's great.
Oh, that's right, because you got a whole menagerie of animals going on.
A lot of stuff. Yeah.
Someone bought a reminded me because someone bought a Vantech white noise sound machine with 20 non looping soothing 20 sounds. Most of them have like 6. It's pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Pretty good.
It's a lot.
30 levels of volume. 7-hour timer setting.
I used to try and go to sleep to the CD of wolves howling.
Your drug days?
I thought I was gonna be like a badass. Like, yeah, dude, I go to sleep.
Part of the pack, bro.
And it was horrifying, Brian. It was terrifying. It was awful. I'd be almost asleep and I was trying to do it, and then you'd hear like yep yep yep, and they'd like be killing something. And that, it was a CD that I had, like an hour of wolves.
I'm wondering if that's meant to condition you for like camping, like, because, you know,
I don't think it was
really
meant to be sleeping to. It was just this cool CD that I had of wolves.
Oh, like for studying or writing or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was for, but I had it and I thought I could go to sleep.
I had a CD for wolves too, but I think I got it in a White Elephant gift.
Yeah,
like really, when I was really young,
it was just wolves on the cover.
Probably around the same time.
Yeah, yeah, and then of course whales.
They had those like at Target all the time, where they'd have like the panel of all the different nature sounds, and you could sample each CD.
What are you supposed to
listen
to?
Remember that?
Yeah, yeah. I guess it's for sleeping, but the wolves didn't work.
No, ocean waves do it for them. They knock me out. But I guess that's not for everyone. Other things purchased on the Amazon banner on Anderson and Brian.
Dripping.
Hello. Oh.
Bless you.
Allergic to people ordering things through our banner. Speaking of which, the banner, as we mentioned a few weeks ago, a month or so ago,
cat purring. Cat purring, not bad.
This goes on for how long?
Forever. It's on a loop. Cat purring. I'm going to fall asleep to cat purring. It's going to piss my cat off so bad.
Say you could do that anyway.
Cat,
you have a cat.
Lock the cat out of the bedroom, and she's going to think that I'm like making out with a new cat. Oh, she'll be mad. Okay.
Don't forget, the banner, like we mentioned a couple months ago, is updated on AndersonandBrian.com. If you bookmarked it a while ago, refresh it or go ahead and click through on the banner for Amazon.
Yeah, I would imagine a lot of you are still clicking through or thinking you're clicking through, but it's not working. So just to let you know that we do have a new one, and you can find it over there on AndersonandBrian.com.
Others purchased include 5 Stella and Chewy's freeze-dried raw surf and turf beef and salmon dinner patties for dogs. Someone got a Fujitsu Scan Snap document scanner, as well as a Canon wireless all-in-one printer with scanner. Gonna scan some shit. High-tech Dexter waterproof walking shoes, gray and size 13. Never heard of this phone before, but it's the Huawei Mate. Is that a real thing?
Huawei
Mate 9 with Amazon. Is that a real
phone? Huawei.
Is that like an upstart company?
It's been around for a little while, but they're definitely not mainstream like an LG or a Samsung.
Or an Apple, like the Apple iPad that was purchased.
What is this Apple? I'm not familiar.
Yeah, someone purchased an Apple iPad with Retina display, as well as a Bose SoundLink on-ear Bluetooth headphones, Cuisinart single-serve coffee maker, as well as a Oziri induction tea maker and cordless kettle. A Makita compact router kit was purchased, a personalized American flag head eagle bust. Wow, eagle head bust. Go Plus pet ramp. Oh, we have one for Charlie. A smoker insulation blanket. You got to wrap your barbecue. You got to, like, if you're a serious barbecuer, I've seen, like, at barbecue competitions, people, like, put foam, like styrofoam, around their barbecues to keep the heat in. Because that thing is escape. Mm-hmm. Got to keep the heat in.
Gotta
for quack,
in.
Quick competition cooking.
Quack, quick.
Add a motor. Chicken coop automatic motor. It raises the door on your chicken coop so your chickens can go free. As well as someone got a small pet door from Carlson.
You got a farmer listening? I love that.
Perhaps. A chicken farmer, or someone just laying their own eggs.
Wait, is it like on a timer?
Add a motor, chicken coop, automatic motor. I'm supposing you could put a timer on it.
What if there's like a really clever fox that gets in there and he has like open?
He just starts to turn the dial slowly. More things. Professional knife sharpener.
Oh, you're going to hit this pose
Avantech
perfectly.
The white noise sound machine, as well as a Concealment Express gun holster. Fits a Glock.
Clever fox like hacks it. Someone bought a gun holster.
Crazy like a fox.
Brian.
A gun holster. All right, things for the movies.
Are the movies that were clicked through since the last time I saw you. The Martian.
Yes, it was.
Extended edition.
It was a long movie, yes, it was.
Matt Damon's in that.
He is.
Okay,
don't spoil it.
For some reason, Just Friends was clicked through.
Oh, smart person.
Sure. Actually, I saw just recently, like a banner ad came up and said, Just Friends is the new perfect holiday film.
It is.
Bullshit. I don't even remember holidays being involved.
Dude, that movie's going to have a resurgence. You watch. And you can be on the Vanguard. Say, I saw it and I loved it.
I cannot be on the Vanguard for that, Brian. Windy City Heat was clicked through. A fantastic movie. However, I've still not seen the very end. I've not seen the payoff.
Yeah.
Mickey's Christmas Carol, 30th Anniversary Edition. Suicide Squad.
I saw that Mickey's Christmas Carol in the theaters.
Wonder Woman. Ingrid Goes West in Gettysburg.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, not a ton of movies there, but thanks for clicking through on the movies that you did.
Yeah.
Ingrid Goes West. Not bad. Aubrey
we should
Plaza.
Get some people clicking through on the Amazon instant videos for the holidays. You know, for Thanksgiving and stuff. You got a lot of downtime. Friday's all yours.
Mm-hmm. Brian, you're doing family that time? Announcer voice family? Thing. Makes me uncomfortable.
What's the announcer voice?
Hey, you got the
downtime. Friday's all yours.
Downtime. Hey, why not click through and watch some holiday movies? All right, way. Listeners.
Thanks for clicking through, guys. Appreciate it.
Oh, dude, now I feel bad.
I know you should. Back to hey, this is Ronald Reagan, and you're listening to The Film Vault on AndersonandBryan.com. Yeah, welcome back. Top 5 recast roles. Let's dive right into it. I wonder if there's any crossover. There were so many that came up on my research. So many.
Yeah, so we are not going to, I take it you're not going to either. Everybody knows about Eric Stoltz in Back to the Future. That story, Michael J. Fox, of course. However, here's a fun little aside. Crispin Glover actually auditioned for Marty McFly.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine?
No, my God, no.
And then we know that he was recast in the sequel. There's also a whole list there, too, of actors that were recast
the
for the sequels.
The Jennifer girlfriend.
Crispin Glover was recast. There was a couple of people.
Oh, yeah, recast for sequels. Sorry. Yes. Yeah.
You know what'd be a good Patreon episode is who you would recast in modern roles.
Ooh.
Like we take like Iron Man. Who would you cast as Iron Man?
Bean.
The
remake.
They're remaking the whole. I thought you say older movies like The Hustle.
No. You take
like
modern movies with significant leading roles, and who in history would you recast them with?
The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I would love to have seen like John C. Reilly and Colin Farrell. Nothing against Colin Farrell, but it would have been sweet to see like a John C. Reilly. Oh, would have been sweet.
Number five
for you.
Number five for me. One of the ones that I actually knew about beforehand, and when it came up in my research, I was like, oh yeah, I remember learning about that in Hearts of Darkness. Mm-hmm. Hearts of Darkness, a filmmaker's apocalypse.
Yes.
Directed by George Heckenlooper. A documentary about the making of Apocalypse Now. Apocalypse Now, starring Martin Sheen as Captain Willard, was originally starring Harvey Keitel. Harvey Keitel is Captain Willard.
This is my number three, so I'm just going to hop on with you.
Oh, sorry
okay?
about that.
No, it's fine. Well, it's going to happen. We're going to have some crossover.
Yeah,
I got a lot of fun also rants as well. But Keitel, Coppola cast him after being so impressed with his work in Mean Streets.
That's right.
And within 3 days of shooting, he realized that Keitel was he found it difficult to play him as a passive onlooker, which was necessary.
This is back in the day. So this is 1976 when they're shooting it, I think, 1977.
Keitel's so intense.
He's so intense. And if you watch Apocalypse Now, Captain Willard, played by Martin Sheen, is not so much intense as he is just kind of
like awestruck,
almost detached and almost like what is going on?
Yeah, like the audience at that time, especially, you know, mixed feelings about the Vietnam War, they needed to have a passive onlooker going down that river and, you know, kind of watching these things happen. I can't imagine Keitel just being awestruck. He horrible casting right there. The idea of having him.
Yeah.
I can understand being impressed with him and seeing him in Mean Streets, but. Like he cannot be intense.
It would have liked been having another passive Robert Duvall character in that role,
right?
And it worked as Harvey Keitel because he was, or excuse me, Robert Duvall because he was just a little sprinkle, a garnish. You know what I mean? On the movie.
There is that element in the military, and there's that element of people who believed in the Vietnam War with that much gusto. Mm-hmm. But Keitel, he would if Coppola was making like a heroic movie, you know, about like a Rambo type. Yeah. But more realistic, Keitel would have been
perfect.
Kicked in
the door and killed Colonel Kurtz.
If we're looking for an American hero.
Funny you mentioned that you know, there are that type in the military. Harvey Keitel was a Marine, and he was playing it. Apparently, the creative difference occurred at the root when, apparently, what I read was Harvey Keitel saw the role being one way. Like, no, I know how you know, military guys are and were in Vietnam, and this is, you know, this is how it would have been. And Coppola didn't want that. He wanted something else.
Rightfully so, especially with the Vietnam War. It's not like they're all military guys, Keitel, right? There's a lot of guys that were kind of picked up off the street and drafted and thrown into that position, which is, you know, it definitely worked a number of years later too when Stone used Charlie Sheen, you know, Martin Sheen's son, to star in Platoon, and he was definitely out of his depth.
He was an overwhelmed observer.
Absolutely. So, yeah.
Not the only film Harvey Keitel has been fired from.
Nope. Apparently he's...
Is that coming up on your list?
No, I'm not putting... Keitel was fired from Eyes Wide Shut by Kubrick. And replaced with the late great director Sidney Pollack.
Do you believe the rumors as to why?
I've heard a number of different rumors. What have you heard?
The most prevalent one I've heard is where he supposedly, the nice side of this story is Harvey Keitel is such a method actor that during one scene when he's naked behind Nicole Kidman, he was actually masturbating and actually ejaculating her hair.
I haven't heard that one.
Well, you have not. What?
I haven't heard that one.
You really haven't? Uh-huh. Oh, that's the story I've heard repeatedly.
I could see that.
Oh, what have you heard?
I could see that. I just heard about creative differences with Kubrick and not doing his own
Nicole
thing.
Nicole Kidman, as the star and producer, was like, he had him off the movie.
Yeah.
Good thing it happened early.
Well, she's sexy. She's, you know, the nape of her neck.
What else? Oh, as I did research for all of my movies, all of my entries, one long shot of Harvey Keitel made it into the movie. There is footage in the film. A lot of times,
but he's
guys,
on the boat.
Yeah, there's a helicopter shot, which understandably they couldn't exactly redo easily with Martin Sheen. They decided to keep in the movie, and it's a long shot. You can't see up close, but Walter Murch, the sound editor, is on camera doing a testimonial many years later saying, oh yeah, Harvey Keitel's in the movie, and that long shot with the helicopter, that's him right there. And they kind of circle it, and there he is.
Footage he could have been dressed as like one of the Avatar characters, and you still want to be able to spot him. Yes. Number five for me, Brian, going way back, way back. A guy named Buddy Ebsen, Wizard of Oz.
That's right.
Wizard of Oz holds the fuck up. You see that on TV, and you're like,
but
how?
And then it's always in our zeitgeist. Yeah.
How in the world is this movie from that long ago? You know what I mean?
Isn't it fantastic they haven't remade it? I mean, they've done versions.
1939. It's just unbelievable. Yeah, they've done The Wiz. And then, they did Return to Oz, which fucked up Little Brian.
The thing with Johnny Depp went, but John Tim Burton movie.
A couple
Depp
years ago, there, yeah, I missed that.
Or James Franco.
God, I felt John good James about Franco, James not Franco. Watching that. It was so fun not watching that one.
I saw it. It was
felt
good.
So good.
I saw it and it wasn't good.
Like every moment that I wasn't watching that one, I just felt like I was winning, you know?
It wasn't good.
Buddy Ebsen, 9 days into filming, Brian, he suffered a severe allergic reaction from breathing the aluminum dust used to create his character, the Tin Man's makeup. He was hospitalized for 2 weeks and recuperated at home for a month after that. Ebsen was replaced by Jack Haley, who we all know as the Tin Man today. And what they did was the aluminum paste was substituted for aluminum dust. in the Tin Man's makeup.
Was
all the scenes.
Was Buddy Epson in Hillbillies? Beverly Hillbillies?
Yeah. Was
famous
he was in a lot of stuff. All the scenes. He just died not too long ago, too. I think just a couple years ago. No, 2008. All the scenes with Epson appeared. It were reshot with Haley, so Epson does not appear in the finished film at all. However, you can hear him singing on a track titled The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. I believe that's the title of it.
We're off to see
the wizard. Yes, you can. Right. That's his actual vocal. They weren't going to. I doubt they did four separate tracks. They weren't going to go back and re-record that entire musical number, so you can hear him singing. But yeah, the poor bastard.
That's right. Could have been a part of history.
Poor son of a bitch. He's better now.
Yeah.
Well, he's dead now, but he got better.
He's in a better place. Epson. Then he died.
So that was a full. They shot. What did I say? How long? They shot for a while. There. They shot with him for a while.
Well, my number four is apropos relative to yours. It's about an actor getting
9 days.
Falling.
Shot for 9 full days, okay. Which is a lot of money.
No.
To go back and reshoot all that shit.
It's no Kevin Spacey where you're locked and wrapped, but it's a lot. Hey, my number four is also an actor who fell ill early in the shooting and had to be replaced, mm-hmm. coincidentally.
Mm-hmm.
One of my all-time favorite movies. Did you know that the alien was not supposed to burst out of John Hurt's chest initially? It's supposed to burst out of John Finch's chest. Is there any list?
No.
Okay. John Finch was the original Kane, not John Hurt, who we all know had the his face hugged and then his chest burst by the alien in Alien. But John Finch, an actor who was Polanski's Macbeth, as Ridley Scott said, he was very impressed with him playing Macbeth in Roman Polanski's film, that he fell ill just a couple of days into shooting. And there are conflicting reports why. The reports range from Ridley Scott and a number of people on the film insist, oh, he was a diabetic and all he was doing was drinking Coke. Like he caused his insulin to spike or drop or whatever it is. And I don't know how it works for John Finch, but he was diabetic and he had a diabetic reaction. And
it worked.
Ridley Scott said he was yellow as a pencil and he holds up a pencil, obviously. The number two pencil, yeah. Presumably. And he collapsed and he's like, you look terrible. Are you okay? He's like, I can't go on.
Are there other numbers? Number ones, number
twos?
There
are.
There are?
And I always thought it was a comical.
Please take out your number two
pencil. Comical
pencils.
Setup, like the number one pencil factory. It's like, oh, we don't do a lot of business. But you know, there's a need for it.
Simpsons.
Yeah.
See the Simpsons? Like the left-handed emporium?
Is it called the left-porium? No, it's called something else.
Not important.
Mm.
Ned Flanders creates a store in the mall that does not do well, and it's only for left-handed people.
John Finch himself shocked it up too. He was affected by the pervasive set smoke, and if you remember on the movie Alien, there was smoke everywhere. It seems more likely that it was a diabetic reaction.
I think it was probably drugs.
John Hurt had already been offered the part and passed due to a scheduling conflict, but of course jumped to the chance when Ridley Scott went to him. He was actually in London and where they were shooting, and he said, hey, any interest in doing this? And they're like, yeah, when you need me, tomorrow. It's literally the next morning when they were talking at night.
Sure.
Footage exists, but did not make it in the final film.
Mm-hmm.
They replaced everything.
This is very similar to another situation that did not end up actually coming to fruition, which is not on my list, therefore, but... It bears being brought up here, which is Tobey Maguire was very close to being replaced by Jake Gyllenhaal for the role of Spider-Man because of a injury that Tobey Maguire got on while shooting Seabiscuit, Brian. And they were concerned that he wasn't going to be able to recover in time from a back injury, I believe it was.
So you shouldn't say these things.
And
what if they're on my list?
But it's not.
I've almost replaced.
Yeah,
almost
there's a lot of fun, but like Jake Gyllenhaal was all prepped and ready. He was going to do it. He was dating Kristen Dunst at the time, so it would have been perfect. Like the kiss would have been like real. The upside down kiss, Brian, would have been different because it would have been Jake. Thank God that didn't happen.
A different gay man.
Thank God that didn't happen. I wonder if that would have made him best friends with Leo. Like, I wonder if they.
Wow, what history could have happened? What history could have changed?
I guess he'd have to go back and be in this boy's life, which is, I think, where they first met. I think that's number four for me, Brian.
No, three.
Number four.
Oh.
Yeah, because.
Or you replaced. That's right.
I did number five. Now I'm doing number four. And I will skip number three, Brian, because you've already fucked it. Oh, remember that late? No, I'm not going to talk. Number four. Remember the lady that was out inside of in front of my supermarket a few weeks ago telling people to F their holes? Remember that?
That's right.
Saw her again a couple days ago.
Oh, good.
She was delightful, though. She was being very sweet.
Was she on her meds?
I guess so.
That's good. Remember the woman outside the bar who was leaning on my truck?
Yes. Someone's vehicle, Brian says, with authority.
No, I don't know. It was sheepish.
I'm saying that sarcastically. Oh. You're looking down.
That was extremely sheepish. It's someone's vehicle.
Stuart Townsend. Don't really know who he is because you know what? He did not get the part that Viggo Mortensen got in Lord of the Rings.
That is shocking. Can you imagine what it would have done to Stuart Townsend's career?
Who knows? or what it might have done to the movie franchise.
He might have been nominated for Best Actor.
He might have ruined the first one, and wouldn't even had like a second one or a third one. I mean, I can't imagine anyone other than Viggo because he's such Argon. I mean, that's where most of us first took recognition of his face, even though he had been acting for some time before.
Yeah,
that.
But he exploded in the public consciousness at that point.
There are 4 days into shooting with Stuart playing the role, Stuart Townsend, that
Stu.
Is, before Peter Jackson said, you know what? Too young for the role. Mm. Not the first time he's done this, too.
He's a youthful looking man.
He uses the too young for the role again later, Brian, with. He replaced
King Kong with a younger King Kong.
With a younger
gorilla.
No. He wanted an older looking Argon. Am I saying Argon's name right? Is that Argon? Aragon? I don't fucking know, dude.
So Argon's a gas.
Aragon.
So he's Aragon.
Unobtainium.
I could be wrong.
Unobtainium. Unobtainium. Unobtainium.
Unobtainium.
Yeah. So he.
Well, Stuart lands on his feet. He starred in the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Which is everyone's favorite.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he did that again where he replaced Lovely Bones. He had somebody else, Peter Jackson, he had somebody else in... Oh, he had Ryan Gosling cast in Lovely Bones.
See?
The Lovely Bones. And then he's like, you know what? Too young. Get out of here. Mark Wahlberg, get your ass in here. And poor Gosling had actually gained weight for the role because he's going to be playing a father for the first time ever.
Right.
And he thought a more portly look would actually help his character.
Dad bod.
And he ended up doing it all for naught. Mm. Poor Gosling. Poor
See,
guy.
You know what I don't like? I don't have Stuart Townsend's whole filmography in front of me. I feel like Peter Jackson should have thrown him a bone. Like, you know what?
A boner. Why would I say that? That's not my style.
That's not you.
That's not me at all.
That's never
Why
mind.
Did I say
I'll
that?
I'll tell you about that later.
Brian.
I'm looking right now. I don't see a Peter Jackson movie jumping out at me. I feel like you should have thrown him a little bone. Like, hey man, I'm sorry, I kind of robbed you of a career making role. Like, let's we're gonna see it later in my list. That does come up later.
The way
list.
I hear it too, like he prepared and rehearsed and did training for 2 full months leading up to the first few days. And it was very unceremonious when they just let him go. And it wasn't even like a sorry, bud.
Mm.
That's the biz. And them is the breaks. Yeah. It happens.
Number three for me. One of my, you know what? Good news, Anderson.
What's that?
Good news.
What's that?
The entire James Bond catalog is streaming on Amazon Prime.
That's not good news.
That's great news.
Brian, you can't do this. What are you doing?
What?
Wait, James Bond is on your list? Or?
No, he's not.
What, you just that's just a out of left field aside?
No, it's related to my number three.
Oh, it is. I should assume that.
The film is You Only Live Twice, and the mm-hmm. the character,
mm-hmm.
Ernst Stavro Blofeld. Blofeld, the iconic villain from the James Bond franchise, who had popped up. So for a couple movies before You Only Live Twice, Blofeld was a character, but he's always obscured by shadows. He was much like Dr. Claw in Inspector Gadget. You only saw him petting a Persian cat, but you never saw his face. He was obscured by shadows or hiding behind a chair or something like that. And he was a mysterious crime leader, sorry, international crime lord. Right. And finally, they decided to make Blofeld a character on screen.
Oh, thank you.
Finally, You Only Live Twice.
Right.
Jan Wierik was selected to play the role. Mm. And he is a Czech actor, a Czechoslovakian actor.
Right.
And,
Czech Republic.
Czech Republic. At that point, it was Czechoslovakia. Right. And it's an iconic villain, parodied, of course, by Dr. Evil. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the whole, everyone knows Blofeld, or at least understands the trope.
Right,
and Jan Wierik is a Czech actor and was chosen because... once he arrived on set, so two things became very obvious to the director as he arrived on set. One, he spoke very poor English. They right. would have had to dub almost all of his lines. He mm-hmm. spoke very poor English. And Blofeld had already been voiced in previous movies, like a British, you know, as like a British crime lord. And he looked like a sweet Santa Claus. They called him like Father Christmas. Oh, or like, you know.
That's sweet.
He had like a beard and he was like a kindly looking old man.
Sometimes that's the scariest of all.
So they shot some scenes with him, and it became very obvious that it wasn't going to work.
Right.
And so they fired him and replaced him with, of course, Donald Pleasance, who became the iconic bald,
right.
You know. And Donald Pleasance is a smallish man who doesn't look that imposing anyway. Uh-huh. But when they shaved his head and when they put that iconic scar right down his face, disfiguring his mm-hmm. face, yeah, much like Dr. Evil,
yes.
it became iconic evil.
Dr. Evil exists if they didn't make that casting change, and instead of the bald head and the scar, he's got like a Santa look.
I think he does exist, but in a very generic way, because he talks like Lorne Michaels, but he has the same very slow delivery, and he has the scar and the bald head and the suit that's crazy and the cat. I mean, he is Blofeld as portrayed by Donald Pleasance.
Number three for me, Keitel, Apocalypse Now, 1979. Mm. Thank you.
There is actually footage from the top of Warwick's head.
Well, I thought we were done.
No, you just I just did my number three. Me. I don't like to interrupt you.
Well, you stop. You stop talking, and I was so pleased by that. I was so pleased.
So Warwick had hair. He is a gray-haired man, and of course, Donald Pleasance bald. You know, as Blofeld.
Right.
And a shot of the top of Warwick's head made it in the film.
Oh my
God!
You
can see it with hair.
Holy shit!
But this is one of those where you don't feel so bad because it was a great choice, and the film would the film franchise, film history, some might say,
you're a giant,
would have been a little less without Donald Pleasance as Blofeld.
007 fan, giant 007 fan sitting across from me here. Do you remember seeing this film and seeing the shot where all of a sudden he has hair and it was distracting?
No, not at all.
Okay. So it's probably like a panning shot or something.
It was it was a shot of Sean Connery talking. So it wasn't like you were paying attention to the guy with hair.
Right.
It's been pointed out on YouTube. It's like, oh yeah, look at that little tuft of hair.
Remember that phase that was happening? It was like really happening like the early mid 90s where like they're claiming to see ghosts in certain movies.
Yes. Well, in Wizard of Oz. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
There was some big movie where like you could clearly see, and I remember we were all pausing. It was like Home Alone or something you wouldn't expect.
There was also the era where they started to draw inappropriate things in Disney films.
Well, that's very different. You're talking about the cocks the penises, the erect,
penises.
Veiny penises on the cover of Little Mermaid, which I have a copy of.
Ooh,
yeah, with the penis.
Can I borrow
with
that?
The penis eyes.
Can I borrow that?
That's hilarious, though. That's a real fuck you to the man.
It really is.
That artist. Yeah. Wonder where that guy is now. We should track that guy down.
He's hosting a podcast.
Wonder what he's doing.
What is he doing?
I need to find that out. Like, where is he now?
Where are they now?
They should do a
Top 5 Where Are They Now. That's a good episode.
That's a great fucking episode. Holy shit.
Yeah.
It's
Logan,
way
write
open.
It down.
Top 5 Where Are They Now. Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, this is good shit.
Because it's not like most desired comebacks. Like, I don't necessarily know if I need the animator from that movie in my life, but I would love to know.
I don't know
to.
If that's like he would be on a list. He's a little bit.
But
too
as early. An example of what
we're
talking
sad
about.
When we do Where Are They Now, a lot of it is going to be like, you know where they are? They're still
movies. Making
movies. They're just not in movies you've ever heard of. Mm. Oh, that's a good one,
that's
Brian.
A good one.
Congratulate yourself, Dave.
Hey, good job, B.
Number three, Keitel, Apocalypse Now, 1979.
Coming up next. Sorry, Logan, we're throwing you all over the place. Coming up next, we will come back with our top two recast roles. Hey guys, no ads this week. We're keeping the show ad-free, but I do want to mention number one.
Thank you. No, thank you.
I do want to mention.
Not on our show, sir.
Do want to mention that our Patreon is available to subscribers if you want to subscribe.
It is.
For just $5 a month, you get a bonus episode plus a lot of spoiler talk and some bonus content that we're working on. And the number one, the first couple episodes are already up. We're working on the third, right?
Yeah, we got the top five Spielberg films as well as the most disturbing.
That's right.
And updated, TV Vault's coming up next.
Updated, disturbing, and
ooh,
TV Vault.
Are we announcing that? Okay.
I guess we are now.
TV Vault.
It, yeah.
We're gonna do a little TV Vault next week on the next month on the first,
right.
on the Patreon bonus stream. People have been asking us, and this is a good time to talk about it. If I sign up, can I get all the back episodes? Good question. They do expire after 90 days. So if you want that first episode, sign up in the next
a month and a half. They got another month and
a half. Okay, so there you go. So don't hesitate. Don't wait to the very last minute because it will go away. But yes, you'll have 90 days to collect everything that's been released so far. But wait too long because you'll start to miss stuff.
There will always be three episodes at least available.
Yes, and some spoiler talk and bonus talk and whatever you want to.
And if you are a Patreon subscriber, you get them. You can download them. It's not like they're going to disappear on you.
You'll always have.
But if you come to the party late, let's say like you don't sign up till next May, you will have missed out on the golden goodness that we've done thus far.
I think Top 5 Disturbing is actually pretty good.
I thought it was okay. I didn't really care for.
I thought Microtron
Spielberg films
really
was surprisingly
good.
Like light.
Yeah.
Or not light, but
robust.
you guys were, you guys had some good discussions in there, some good arguments.
Agreed. So, for Patreon, you will be getting t-shirts are coming out in the next, we're going to announce t-shirts in the next week or so.
Yeah.
You, as a Patreon subscriber, will be getting a 5% discount.
20%.
20%, 5%.
So,
it'll essentially be
like a free month Patreon.
Yeah, that month will pay for itself because you're getting that off t-shirt.
And I got to say, these shirts are the sleekest, coolest looking film ball shirts that we've made thus
far.
Pretty sharp. For my money. I can't wait to get one of these for myself. I'm not just saying that these things are fucking sweet.
Wear around your own merch.
I might have to. And we're gonna get these super comfortable, like the same way that
they will be the softest of all shirts. I still wear my grouper shirt. I wore it yesterday.
Such a comfortable shirt, right?
Comfortable shirt.
Yeah,
love it.
So I'm very excited. We're very excited to announce the new shirts, the new round of shirts, which we'll be doing next week.
Anderson and Brian, there's a button there and for Patreon, and of course, and you'll get all the information for shirts on Anderson and Brian as well next week. Patreon.com, search Anderson, search Film Vault.
Patreon.com/Film Vault.
Oh,
but there's also like a button over on Anderson and Brian, right? You go over to Anderson and Brian, it's right there.
Lots of several buttons.
Get the keys to the vault. We are doing extra bonus content. It's a lot of fun, and don't miss out, because if you like the Film Vault, a little more Film Vault in your life, it can't be bad.
I find myself looking forward to these bonus episodes, I'll be honest.
I'm pretty excited about finally doing this TV Vault.
TV Vault.
Volume
we got so
one.
Much we have. We're going to have to break up the volumes.
Yeah.
All right, looking forward to that next week. Until then, back to the show. Yeah, welcome back. Time to talk about our top two on recast roles.
Oh, like Repo Man.
What's that?
The song, the music. Oh. Digging.
This is not the music that I'll be playing in the actual episode, by the way. Well, now it will be. This song.
Acceptable.
Anyways.
Yeah, it's a Repo Man riff they got going there.
My number two. This is the only one where it never made it to set. But they made it pretty far down. This was the director's choice. They made it pretty far down the road, even going so far as to have the actor of choice go to a meeting dressed up as the character to convince the suits. And the suits put their foot down and said, nah, we need a more bankable star. And it's also the example I told you about when the director does right by the guys. Like, you know what? This would have been a career-changing role, and I'm going to do my best to make it right to you.
Did they make it right?
To an extent. I mean, yeah, he gave him some favorable casting later on down the road. Talking about in the original Terminator is supposed to be played by, do you know?
Lou Ferrigno.
No, it was not supposed to be a muscle-bound Terminator. It was supposed to be a little closer to Robert Patrick in the T-1000. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be played by Lance Henriksen.
Probably went too far the other way.
Macaulay
Culkin would have been too far. Yes.
Not born. Okay. Or just an infant.
Too wavy.
Lance Henriksen. Lance Henriksen, who ended up having a small role in Terminator as one of the cops. An iconic sci-fi actor. Do you know Lance Henriksen?
I know the name. I'm looking him up right now.
Well, you would know him, Anderson, as Bishop the Android in Aliens.
Oh, of course. It's Lance.
So when James Cameron came around and was like, you know what? I have a little more power over casting my films now. It's 1986. I can, you know, I had a big hit with Terminator. I'm doing Aliens. Lance, you're going to be the new Android, and you will be one of the co-stars of the movie. That was a very big role in Lance Henriksen's career. So he did right by him. But like I said,
Ian Holm was the original.
Yes, he was not Bishop, but
he was Ash.
Ash, thank you very much. Good call. When James Cameron was writing The Terminator, he'd originally envisioned Henriksen playing the title role. I'm reading from Terminatorpedia, Wiki Terminator. He went so far as to paint a picture of the Terminator using Henriksen's face, and he had the actor dress up as the character and attend an Orion Pictures production meeting as the character. And regardless, the filmmakers were like, yeah, this you're an unknown director. This is a weird sci-fi property.
The filmmakers, the studio.
Yes, you're right. The suits,
right.
Not the filmmakers. They said to James Cameron, you're unknown. He's unknown.
He had Piranha 2 at that point.
If you need the money, true. If you need the it may be a strike against him. If you need money to make a film like this,
Piranha
you're going
to
need gonna put Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, yeah. You know what?
Here are your choices.
I don't agree with those fat cats at the top. I think a lot of them are uninspired and they don't have creative
body. They're looking at the bottom line.
Perhaps it's because, you know, it's so seared into the reality of what Terminator is, but it seems like they made a good call.
They did make a good call and made the right call. However, I think Lance Henriksen in this movie would not have made it and he works a movie. A different movie and a less iconic role.
It would have probably been more like
very
a,
effective.
More like a Blade Runner type movie.
Yeah, it would have been like stalking them instead of like physically threatening them. You know what I'm saying? Because he's the same size as Michael Bean.
Wait.
What?
What? Okay, all right. Never mind. I'm getting things confused.
All right. Bishop, aliens.
I get Alien and Aliens and Terminator 2 confused quite a bit.
Oh, really?
As far as just because they're both James Cameron movies, they're both like much more powerful,
robust
versions of the. And I was thinking that for a moment that James Cameron wasn't responsible for the first Terminator, and I'm absolutely wrong. So
he was. Ignore all that. He had all of his dreams squashed for Lance Henriksen.
Number
came back around for the guy. I like that. He did right by him.
Numero dos, number two for me. Shocking, and not that I'm a giant fan of this film by any far stretch. Mm-hmm. I saw it. I can't remember. I either loved the first half or the second half, and hated the first half or the second half. Can't remember. It was two halves, two movies for me. Talking about Shrek.
What was supposed to be a Shrek?
Shrek is supposed to be a green ogre.
Right.
Yeah. And
was it a voice?
Chris Farley.
Oh, was he the donkey?
No, Shrek.
Oh, he was me.
To 90% of the lines.
Oh, I thought.
Holy shit.
Really? Yeah. I thought that that there was a Mike Myers like co-written property or something.
I always thought Mike Myers was behind it from the get-go, but. You know, it just seems like such a Mike Myers thing, kind of like Schwarzenegger is the Terminator, but
he really owned it.
Chris Farley,
I didn't know that,
and he was up to 80-90% of his lines.
Oh, that's brutal.
There's like screen tests out there where it's Chris Farley doing the voice of Shrek.
Oh, that's brutal.
You can look it up on YouTube.
And
is it good?
I was a big Chris Farley fan. So I
probably
would
have been a giant Shrek fan had it been Chris Farley. And nothing against Mike Myers, Mike Myers is like just like that uncle that kind of like, all right, dude, enough. Right. I get it. You do impersonations and whatnot. Seems like a super nice guy, but it's like enough. He doesn't
very many impersonations. No. As the second most important thing in my life after WWF was Saturday Night Live. So he doesn't do impressions. But he does characters galore. He's always on character.
Oh, this is great. Logan's going to pull up some screen tests or actual stuff that has made it through.
Look at him producing.
Here's little Chris Farley doing Shrek, originally his role.
I like my cockles room temperature, thank you very much.
Hey, if you're not doing this for cockle woman, why are you doing it?
Simple. Fartwad gets his princess, I get what I want.
Which is? Now come on, what do you want?
I don't have time to set it to music.
Oh, this is another one of those onion things.
No, this is one of those drop it and leave me alone. Things.
Well, why don't you want to talk about it?
Why do you want to talk about it?
Why are you answering the question with a question?
Why are you asking questions I don't want to answer?
Why are you blocking?
I'm not blocking.
Then why do you have problems expressing your wants?
I don't. I want you to shut up. See? No problem.
You're just displacing your anger.
Believe me, it's properly placed.
You're really mad at whoever did this to you.
No one did anything to me.
Yes, yes, yes. Someone hurt you so bad. Someone hurt you many years ago.
Leave my parents out of this.
Breakthrough. Let's go with that. Let's explore family origin. Were you hugged as a child, Shrek?
Am I just so used to the Mike Myers thing that I
want a home?
Or would this have been better or as good?
I don't know. It's really hard to tell. It's distracting too because it doesn't. It sounds like voice. It sounds like they're both acting.
Yeah,
like, it sounds like they're on stage or something doing a teleplay, but because we don't get to see the visuals of the character. But yeah, it would have been a whole different thing.
Would have been interesting. Well, I didn't know that.
Oh, Chris Farley. You know what?
Look at you bringing
in hindsight,
bringing knowledge.
Well, you talked about coming in Nicole Kidman's head.
That happened.
Perhaps.
I have proof.
Like a locket of sticky hair?
Still sucked. Still clumped.
Brian, it's filthy. What was I saying? Where am I going?
You said Chris Farley is what you said.
Oh, in retrospect, and looking back, it's like, well, the studio might have wanted to take a look at their decision there, especially when they wanted to be a tentpole.
They wanted to be
trilogy.
Franchise.
Yeah, franchise. Yeah, love Chris Farley, but I mean, morbidly obese.
And also,
not a long shelf life.
Was a known drug user, and is that, you know. Do they want him showing up on the red carpet? You know,
I was at a Kings game once where he showed up and like he was on. It was in between periods and he was on the other side of the glass and he like climbed over the fucking glass and was like slipping and sliding all over the ice. People loved it.
Do you think there'll ever be another Chris Farley?
No, because I don't think that we get reincarnated. But I don't want to get into
another Chris Farley type.
Oh, type. Yeah, absolutely. Of course.
I always thought Bobby Moynihan was.
But I can't. I can't.
But now he's doing like
serious
stuff.
I can't see him doing the stuff like. What I'm saying is the antics, not the acting. The antics, like Bobby Moynihan would never climb
some
the,
of the, SNL,
the glass.
Oh, sure, in real life, yeah. But
they'll get their
the,
stomach stapled before they get to that point.
Like Zach Galifianakis would never climb the glass at a hockey game. Yeah, he's such a unique creation.
What were you gonna say, Lux?
I was just gonna say some of like Bobby Moynihan's sketches on SNL. Some of his characters had the same kind of physical traits.
Yeah, they do that on SNL. I don't know if Brian will admit to this, but they cast characters.
Yeah, of course.
And, like, they have the Jewish guy, which was Adam Sandler.
They needed a black guy. They needed a black girl. Back in the day, they needed a black guy. They needed a black girl.
They didn't have a black girl for years and years and years until they were ashamed of
voice guy.
All right, God, what's your number? What, number two?
No, I'm on to number one, man.
Number one?
Number one.
What is it, Brian? What is it, dude?
Speaking of James Cameron.
Oh, of course. Why even? James Cameron actually said, you know what? This would be better with Bean.
I've been written down.
I don't know if it's worthy of that excitement, but the fact that James
Logan,
Cameron probably said that.
Verify that Better with Bean is in all caps with two exclamation points.
Definitely is.
I'm sorry to
number
steal
one.
Your Bean thunder.
So, like Anderson said, James Cameron's making a more robust sequel to Alien. Not necessarily better, but more robust.
His pitch was, you barely see that fucking thing in the first one. Here we go. My version is
wall-to-wall.
Tons of Giger aliens. Xenomorphs.
Yep. Second act, third act, aliens everywhere.
Like if he made Jaws 2, it would have just been a school of fish. A school of sharks.
He did make Jaws 2. It's called
Piranha 2.
Piranha 2.
The Spawning. That's what it's called. It's called Piranha 2. The Spawning.
So
that's James Cameron's first film. That's
the
what
aforementioned
we're
Michael Biehn from Terminator, who played Kyle Reese in Terminator and knew Michael James Cameron very well, obviously, replaced James Remar. I should have written down what you know James Remar from, but you know James Remar. Anderson, please look it up. James Remar, what is he best known for?
Why do I have James written down? I wasn't looking for James. I was looking Remar. For James James Cameron.
James Cameron, James Remar.
And I'm already on James, so I will give you, how do you spell it? R-E-M? There it is.
M-A-R.
He's in Sex and the City.
He isn't. He is. A lot of people would know him.
Oh, wait a minute. Of course. James Remar.
James Remar.
Dude, he's a well-known character actor. He's Gaines in 48 Hours. He
got
the shit out of me.
That's all. I did write that down.
Gaines.
Yes.
And he's Dexter's dad.
So, yes.
He's Dexter's dad in Dexter.
So, producer Walter Hill had directed
Remar. He's Ajax in the Warriors. He's Ajax in the Warriors.
In the Warriors and in 48 Hours.
He just tried to get a little light rape on in Central Park. It turned out to be an undercover cop, unfortunately. So she gave him a bracelet connected to he had a very large charm that was in the shape of a life-size park bench, Brian. It made it difficult for him to walk around,
but he tried. Remar was apparently something of a loose cannon.
I love him.
On set. By his own admission, Anderson, he had a bad drug problem upon arriving on set and learning that just next door in the next studio stage, Frank Oz was shooting Little Shop of Horrors at the next stage, and James Remar somehow got a hold of a shotgun and some live rounds and went next door and blew a hole in the set of another movie, of another film.
That's like in the pre-skate warm-up hockey game, and sometimes one of the assholes on one of the other teams, you know, they're both like shooting on their own net, will just take the puck and he'll just shoot at the length of the ice into their net during warm-up,
send
it just sends everyone into a fury. I've seen huge brawls happening before the game even starts because you do that. Like Remar would be that guy on the team. Oh, I love this Remar.
He was reportedly found with drugs on set, which just means they wanted to fire him because I don't think anyone's ever brought drugs on a movie set. I don't think anyone's ever happened before. But it might have been the first time. He was swiftly replaced with Michael Biehn.
Did he deny it? Why are you making these accusations?
No, but the joke is like, I think they wanted him gone. So when they found him with drugs, like,
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because
I see what you're saying.
I'm sure there's never been another film where. Yeah.
Right. Like everyone has drugs. That's part
of course,
the course.
It's everywhere.
But it's a nice loaded excuse to get rid of anyone you want, which is
so
nice.
So even the cast was taken by surprise. There was no announcement, according to Cynthia Dale Scott.
They let him go
the
for
actors.
What? Drugs? Really?
Well, he had a bad drug problem. And I think he was, acting out with a shotgun.
I'm just picturing like his co-stars going, coke? That's why they fired
him?
Really?
It?
What? Just for doing
something? And they start shuffling their pockets around.
That's unbelievable.
It was never announced, according to the actor on the set. Michael Biehn just showed up, and they're like, all right, we're reshooting some scenes. And
go ahead.
I was going to say, like Apocalypse Now, a long effect shot of Remar actually remains in the film because they were going to redo
this
whole
thing. And they shot his back. You see his back a number of times. I started reading about this one and then I just gave up because I realized it was going to be on your list. I didn't make the James Remar. I guess I never realized what his name was. And I love this actor. I love him. And I'm just terrible with actors' names. I don't invest a lot of time in actors' names, Brian.
He's also more recognizable than he is known as a name.
Now, I apologize to Bill. From Bill's Emporium or whatever it's called. But
we're going to drop a name?
We're going to drop a name. Michael Biehn was on the Film Vault.
I talked to Michael Bean's son today about this. He's like, oh yeah, James Remar. Like, you know.
So we had my, it was Brian's like make a wish, I think, looking back on it. It's how we got him on the show. And he was a really nice guy.
I made that I was dying.
Really nice guy when he came on the Film Vault. However, it's kind of ironic and funny thinking that somebody got fired for drugs and being erratic and got replaced with Michael Biehn.
You know what we need?
Yeah.
But clean Biehn.
More of the same. Let's, you know what?
Clean Biehn.
It'd be like firing Chris Farley for being too heavy and then replacing him with...
Kevin James.
I guess Kevin James.
Well, that's what they did Grown Ups, essentially. He's supposed to be the Chris Farley person, stand-in.
Dude, Chris Farley would have.
I know, would have been great.
So many.
Wouldn't have been a great movie, but would have been a great, you know, cast.
Yeah.
James Remar.
Okay.
What's your number one, bro? Do you even number one, bro?
I don't have a number one. It's my new thing. I don't do number ones, bro.
It's an anti-ending.
I would see the shit out of Paul Blart Mall Cop if it was Chris Farley.
Oh, yeah. You know what? It's a running joke in the Cowan household. The wife, every time Paul Blart comes up, she goes, I know you're going to see that secretly and you're going to love that movie. Because she caught me giggling at some dumb thing in one of the trailers for Paul Blart like years ago. And now it still happens. Every time Kevin James comes up with anything, she goes, Paul Blart, honey. Paul Blart.
Chris Farley and Pixels.
Will she watch it with you? Making Mr. to watch it.
We're not going to watch it.
Making Mr. to watch it.
Number one for me. Oh, it's an easy. It's a layup because this movie means so much to me. I mean, look at my goddamn shirt, Brian. I'm wearing a shirt right now that says, I drink your milkshake on the back. That just reminds me. Every morning I watch bullshit cartoons with a child. And we had Curious George was on just yesterday or maybe 2 days ago. Okay. And they were talking about pumps and how they work. And they use the straw example. They're like, we'll take the straw, George. I could drink this straw. We use this straw and it's going to take from me. I'm like, are they doing this on purpose? What I'm getting at, I'm sorry. That was just, I forgot all about that. Not that far of a
Paris corner here.
I'm talking about my number one is a little There Will Be Blood. Paul Dano replaced Kel O'Neill to play Eli Sunday as well as Paul Sunday.
So they weren't originally supposed to be twins?
See, a lot of people think that he, because, okay, there's twins in There Will Be Blood, right? And we see Paul Sunday very briefly. We don't see much of him. He's the one that turns out to be the good son, at least according to Daniel Day-Lewis. Why am I drawing a fucking dude? Baby brain.
What are you asking? What are you asking for?
Look at you. I got the answers. I have the answers.
No, well, I can tell
Daniel
you.
Daniel Plainview. I had to recall that on my own, Brad. I'm not going to get it from you, you fuck, because it's There Will Be Blood. And Daniel Plainview, remember, he's like, Paul, he's a much better brother. He's a real success. He came and he gave me all the information. We're good. Paul Dano was supposed to just play Paul Sunday, the very small character.
That's right. The character you barely even see.
Kel O'Neill was going to play Eli Sunday, who was the one who got into it nonstop with Daniel playing
the second.
And, you know, the rumor is that Daniel Day-Lewis was very difficult in between takes and, like, at lunch and just on set in general.
He never broke character.
Yeah, because he doesn't. He's very method, and he would just fuck with this kid. And that's the rumor. I don't know if it holds any water, but that's what everyone's heard, and that's all I can find when I poke around the internet. So 2 weeks in, Paul Thomas Anderson said, you know what? What if we went with this Paul Dano kid in both roles? And he had very little time to adjust. And they both Daniel Day-Lewis as well as Paul Dano, put in remarkably over-the-top performances, yet they somehow work. I mean, it's some of the most overacting you're going to see in any movie, but it's fucking genius. And I can't imagine anyone other than Paul Dano playing that role of Eli Sunday. Yeah. Oh, he's fantastic.
Kel O'Neill, very obscure. The last movie he acted in that I recognize is Domino.
Yeah, he kind of stopped acting after that.
He's directing a little bit, apparently.
Like shorts and TV documentaries. Kel O'Neill. I wonder if that's true. I wonder if he just couldn't take it. I could see that. I think there's a lot of, like, you know, snowflakes, actor snowflakes out there.
Without knowing the details.
Drama kids.
A little harsh calling a snowflake, but they could maybe.
I'm just saying that he's different. Everyone's different.
Gotcha.
Every snowflake is different.
That's true, actually. They're all unique.
And fragile.
I would love to hear the listener top five. Did we get some good responses?
Yeah, we got enough to make a definitive top five from the listeners.
Yeah, right.
First, we have a tie for four. Aragorn from Lord of the Rings.
Argon.
No, as well as Hugh Jackman from Wolverine. which or as Wolverine, which I
was he recast?
Forgot to write down who recast.
No, it's it, well, he they were thinking about somebody else.
Oh, really? They shot. I didn't know that. Okay. He's absolutely perfect as Wolverine. It was a risk because at that point he was pretty unknown, at least in the States.
Number three, we have.
They wrote it for Elvis when he had mutton chops.
Oh, that's a long time ago.
It was supposed to be in the '70s. Okay. Yeah.
Number three, we have Keanu Reeves replacing Will Smith in The Matrix.
Will Smith was originally supposed to be in The Matrix,
according to our listeners.
This is another one of those, like, you know, he was offered the role, yeah, or maybe, they talked about it.
Accepted.
Yeah,
that's. I think that's what a lot of our listeners were. Right, we're
that's
using
fine. That's
we're,
fine.
With those
this
kinds of situations
because we don't expect the listeners to go out and do all the fucking research.
Right.
It's just like
I didn't expect
to get
five.
Because they know, really?
Yeah, I expect to get maybe like Back to the Future, which you know, obviously is number one. Spoiler alert!
Wow.
But number two is Harrison Ford replacing Tom Selleck in Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that's a pretty well known. They never shot anything, but he accepted the role.
They were moving forward with it, and then he got Magnum PI, and he's like, you know what? Fuck this! I'm out of here. Can you imagine?
I thought he was disappointed.
No, it was up to him. Tom Selleck got to choose.
Oh, really? I always heard that it wasn't up to him.
I had heard that he chose Magnum P.I.
Oh, I don't know. I don't understand
it, though, because, I mean, it's Spieley and Nochin Lucas over there, and, like, they have experience with
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford at this point. Why wouldn't they just be a natural fit? You know what
Maybe
I mean?
They just saw him as... you have to think of Tom Selleck circa 1981.
But it would have been such a different movie.
Yeah.
Maybe it would have been more like The Crystal Skull, like what they wanted to do. Maybe they got lucky that they got swagger.
Yeah, you're right. That sort of detached coolness. Yeah. Because obviously, what's his face? Selleck would have brought a very different take.
Can you imagine him like running away? I'm having a hard time thinking of like old Selleck. I'm thinking of modern day Selleck running away from like the boulder.
Jet black hair.
Leo DiCaprio.
Should we do our also-rans?
I think so.
Yeah, we're not going to do it. We're going to do a female version, female roles.
Leo DiCaprio was all set and ready to do American Psycho.
Yes, that's right.
They didn't shoot any scenes.
He chose the beach.
They didn't shoot any. I forget why. Oh, it's because he chose the beach. Yeah. Yes.
I think he also shied away from the controversial material. That was very controversial at the time.
Al Pacino. This is a huge one, but it's kind of cheating. They didn't shoot anything with it. But Al Pacino was all set to be Han Solo. And he was into it, but he, from all accounts, couldn't understand anything that was going on in the script. And he's like, you know what? This is, I don't even know what the fuck's going on. So he walked away.
Wow.
Yeah. Can you imagine?
Yeah, actually, that is, I would love to have seen if some footage ever made it, you know, to the light of day. That would have been pretty cool.
I'm sure that, they got a screen test. Yeah.
Blazing Saddles was originally starring Gig Young, and of course Gene Wilder took over the role. Dr. Strangelove, I was actually shocked that it wasn't on your list. Apparently Peter Sellers was supposed to play another role, the Slim Pickens role, but he hurt himself on set doing something, and they replaced him with Slim Pickens. He was going to do another role.
What? Oh, Slim Pickens was the last minute insert. Hmm.
Yeah, interesting.
I don't know if I buy that.
That's what I heard. Life of Pi, speaking of Tobey Maguire, I thought you were going to go this way, was Tobey Maguire played the reporter in Life of Pi, and they shot all the scenes, and at the last minute, upon looking at the film, Ang Lee was like, having a big star here is very
distracting. Yes.
So they replaced him with Rafe Spall.
Hmm.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Also, that would have been horrible white casting.
Oh, is it not a white person in the book?
Life of Pi?
No, wait. No.
Not the lead.
That's
the
reporter.
The reporter.
Shows up and the book ends.
Sorry,
it is a white guy.
I tuned in halfway through that, apparently.
Little Shop of Horrors, the Jim Belushi small role cameo, was actually shot with Paul Dooley. That footage exists somewhere. Stuart Townsend, yeah. Predator. Predator was originally, the Predator was Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to make him more agile, but he couldn't move around in the suit and he was too small, so they replaced him with Kevin Peter Hall.
I can't imagine Jean-Claude being cool with that. He's such a megalomaniac. I just see him like doing all he can so people can recognize.
Can I take off the helmet?
It's just me.
a role. Here's an interesting one. One of the only roles, I think I think the only role aside from Lord of the Rings that ended, did Viggo Mortensen got nominated for Best Actor for Lord of the Rings at one point, right? For Return of the King?
I believe so.
Another one that got nominated,
Lord of the Rings guy,
nominated
though,
so. For an Oscar. The role was nominated. Ed Harris took over the role of Christoph in The Truman Show for Dennis Hopper. He actually shot some scenes, and I think Dennis Hopper was very difficult to work with. It wasn't giving the director, Peter Weir, what he wanted, and it ended up being an Oscar-nominated part.
What movie are you talking about?
The Truman Show.
Truman Show.
Truman Show. Mm-hmm.
All right.
And V for Vendetta was, it's almost silly because Hugo Weaving is behind a mask the entire time.
Right.
But it was James Purifoy for a lot of the movie.
Half of the movie.
Yeah. So anyway, so before, really
what
interesting.
What was his problem? Like, he got tired of acting with a mask on.
I think it may
that
have
was
been
his issue. Yeah.
Either way, I'm excited to do the female version. We shouldn't wait so long this time. That should be in the next few weeks.
Couple weeks.
I also got a... I promised last week I'd give you the top the list of top five for interrogation scenes.
Yeah, do it.
So number five, we have True Lies.
Yep, that's a great scene. It was on my also rans. Remember where he almost gets interrogated. It's a great twist on that scene. Great twist on that twope.
James
great
Cameron.
Twist on that twope.
James Cameron getting way too much airtime in this episode.
That's right, so much Cameron.
Number four might be considered torture, but Casino Royale.
He's trying information.
Number three, The Dark Knight. Where Batman's interrogating Joker.
Yeah.
Number two,
very violent.
Basic Instinct.
Surprise! It didn't come up on our also rans. That is
a lot of Bush.
Worth mentioning at least.
And the number one is voted on by our listeners is L.A. Confidential.
Yeah, good scene.
Really? It's the number one, huh?
Number one, I guess.
Huh. Also, it was brought to my attention just today via email from a listener who I didn't know I was going to be talking about this. So it's not. I don't have the name handy. What's going on? Sorry, the headphones were freaking out again. I know, but we can. And that was a Coherence. Oh, remember Coherence?
No, Compliance.
Compliance.
Yeah. With the girl and the phone?
And the phone, yeah. Compliance? Coherence. Yeah. I always get Compliance and Coherence confused. Those two movies. Very different movies.
Wait, I don't know what Coherence is.
Get on the fucking mic.
I don't know. Sorry, I'm stretching. I don't know what Coherence is.
Coherence is a very small budgeted film, $50,000, about a dinner party, and perhaps different dimensions come into play.
It's on the top of my taste page.
It's fun.
Wants me to watch it really bad.
It's a good one. Check it out. And it's a great movie to see what $50,000 can give you. It's a little bit like The Invitation. A little bit. I liked it more than The Invitation.
Mm. We're going to gamble?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Last week, he gambled on Murder on the Orient Express. At the time, the Rotten Tomatoes score was 66%. Anderson bid 59 and Brian 70. Currently, the Rotten Tomatoes score, the week after its release, has gone down to 58%.
Ooh, what?
What did you bet? Anderson
bid 59, making him the winner.
It went below your score.
Son of beach, son of beach, son of beach.
Well done.
You know, when I was on Red Edit, because somebody gave me the link, and I was on Red Edit reading about the show, which is always kind of weird. I don't like to do that. Sure. I'm a very personal guy. I like to, you know, do personal emails back and forth. I don't like to see, you know, comments and whatnot. It gives me the heebs and the jeebs, Brian. You
can't say heebs.
I can when I say it in that context, but now you fucked it up.
I think you can.
So, somebody was saying that they were very tired of the Rotten Tomatoes bit and the gambling bit, and they said, "Yeah, I just fast forward through that part."
It's the end of the show; you can just stop listening.
You can just stop. Are they really want to hear the listener art us talk about things I can't see? Yeah. Hey, it's maybe that's what they meant. It's one of the rare times we talk about movies that are about to come out.
They wrote fast to fast forward. You know what? I want to hear your.
I also
take.
Feel like there's a lot of people say, "Oh, fast forward through that." I don't think they've fast forward.
You don't what?
No. I don't think there's as much fast forwarding as people say. I think it's more of a posture thing. Like when people say something's unlistenable, that's unlistenable.
Oh,
so
people,
really, you
yeah,
can't
people
listen?
Speak in exaggeration.
Hyperbole.
Yeah, I feel like that's the only way they think they can get their point across. Everything's got to be a plus to the 10th power.
Honestly, it would be more impactful if someone like emailed me or commented and was like, you know what? Honestly, I used to like the gambling bit, but it's gotten a bit tired. I'd be like, oh well, interesting. But I'm like, this is part of the show.
We want to read it. We read it like, you know what? I'm really tired of the gambling part. Like, you always read it the worst. Dude, I'm doing what I do, what you do. I don't have anything. I didn't know I was going to win this week.
I didn't know.
And I could tell you the killing of a sacred deer. I would love to get your take on that. Ooh. But I don't want to do that thing where we talk about the same movie fucking back-to-back weeks.
We got three billboards coming out.
Why don't we make him watch it, and then we do the spoiler discussion of it next week for Patreon.
Anderson's right, though. The back-to-back thing does get, especially for a film that not a lot.
No, we don't need to talk about it on the show. Huh. You can give a quick like. I liked it.
Well, that's not a good instinct.
It's not terrible. We're going to do a bonus discussion for sure, for spoiler discussion for three billboards next week.
There's a Greta Gerwig movie, directed movie.
No,
it's supposed to be good.
God awful.
Oh,
right. It looks god awful.
It's supposed to be good.
Bird.
Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, yes.
There's a movie called Lady Bird and a movie called LBJ at the same time in theaters.
Ooh, LBJ.
Oh, no.
God, it feels so good not watching that. Oh, it feels really good not watching. You know what? I'm going to have you watch.
Every moment I'm not watching it, I feel great.
I got a movie for you. I've not seen it. I'm going to do all my damnedest to see it. It's really tough to track down now, though, because it just didn't do too well. But it's Todd Haynes' new film. And Wonderstruck, check it out. We will both talk about it.
All right.
Art house film.
Wonderstruck.
Wonderstruck. We hopefully will both be discussing Wonderstruck next week.
Wonderstruck.
I just got to figure out a way to go see it because it's not playing anywhere near me.
You being Wonderstruck.
Unfortunately.
Down, down, down. Wonderstruck.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Brian, that's not what it is. It's not that. Baby. You're familiar with Todd Haynes, of course.
I'm familiar with AC/DC.
Brian. Todd Haynes. Wonderstruck. Wonder also, I think, comes out this week. Wonder.
Yep. Which, but this week you're gambling on
Wonder.
What is not Wonderstruck?
No, well, there's a different movie called Wonder, which comes out this week about a child's face that is horribly disfigured.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He wears a space helmet.
Owen Wilson.
You can tell he got it from
not Owen Wilson.
You can tell he got it from Owen Wilson, his dad.
Isn't that
his dad? That's stunt casting.
I know, but his face is not the one that's deformed.
Do you not think there's a 2% chance the director
possibly
early on in the casting was like, that'd be fucking great.
I don't think so. He's a suicide survivor. I don't think that they.
No, Luke Wilson is.
No, Owen Wilson is.
Caught a glimpse in the mirror.
Yeah, so it's Jacob Tremblay from Room who actually plays a little kid. My wife was very disturbed and upset to hear that because she thinks that they should have found a child actor who actually has a deformed face. I tried to explain to her that it would be a great challenge. Great challenge. Very big challenge. And we continued to argue about it for 10 minutes. I'm like, should they only have doctors play doctor roles? I mean, where are we going with this?
What are we gambling?
This week you're gambling on Justice League.
Oh my God.
Are they keeping the score a secret?
Yes. This looks
good. You know that, okay.
No, but
we need to talk about this though, because
we both know that.
I wanted to talk about this, but you'll gamble on Wonder instead then.
No, let's gamble on Justice League.
Well, we know it was the score. I guess that's
but
true.
I mean, it gives us, we both know how to skew.
No. Well, so the reason why they're withholding the score is because they're launching a Facebook Live show tonight called See It or Skip It, and they're holding the Rotten Tomatoes score. Even though the embargo on the reviews lifted this morning, they're holding the Rotten Tomatoes score to unveil it on this show. Now, it's Rotten Tomatoes. Do they have of course they have the right to, but should they be holding a score when they don't themselves produce that score? They just own the technology that aggregates it?
Oh, for sure, yeah. I mean, they're the ones who gather it.
So if Google wanted to promote something, you'd say they can hold the search results of the Film Vault until they release it on a specific show.
Not the Film Vault, because I mean,
where's the line then, though? Like
the line is like if they created this algorithm, they created this thing to go out and collect the information. Like if we did a poll, the Film Vault did a poll.
We could do the legwork.
But does it also hurt that Warner Brothers is a partial owner of Rotten Tomatoes?
Yes, it does.
Someone tweeted
me this exact question today. Like,
that's conflict of interest.
Does it hurt the? Can they be criticized for it? Like, it's their choice as a company. But yes, they can absolutely be criticized for this. This is absolutely open for. And by the way, I'm not big. So tell me what you guys think about this. I'm not big into conspiracy theories, but my theory is that someone tapped them on the shoulder at some point. For some Warner, exec got a hold of some Rotten Tomatoes exec, or there was some Fandango, mediator, and someone tapped them on the shoulder and was like, "Listen, this is not going to be a well-scored movie. I need you to do anything you can to keep this score a secret because we got to sell some fucking pre-tickets."
No, Brian, that's
they were going to sell tickets anyways to this movie.
They would sell less if it was a bad score.
It didn't stop Batman vs. Superman. It was one of the highest grossing films of that month.
But now we have fatigue after Justice League, after Batman vs. Superman.
We had fatigue at Batman v Superman. It was only a year ago.
I appreciate how you would come to that conclusion, but they have this thing called an embargo, which they can set for whatever they want. They can have it be day of. Oftentimes it is day of the actual release.
They're not setting the embargo. They're just releasing releasing the aggregated score.
I get it. The embargo was lifted really late.
Today.
A lot of time embargoes are lifted. You can talk about a movie that you've seen like 2 weeks, maybe a month before. Maybe there is no embargo. If you've seen the movie, you got a screener, go ahead. Hog wild. When they release the embargo like the day before, terrible sign. But they sometimes they do a day of as well, which they would have done.
The embargo being the studio, the film, the studio
does not allow you to publish your review. Yes,
which is a strange thing that they dictate to journalists how they can review.
Well, they're the ones who are making their product available to the journalists. They don't have to do
in
that.
Advance, so, yeah.
And it's a give and take.
Yeah, you're right.
There was that whole LA Times thing a couple weeks ago. Did you hear about
Disney
that?
Disney films, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and the critics won.
Yeah, I mean.
LA Times won.
Yeah. They ended up reinstating them.
All right.
So Justice League then. With no Rotten Tomato score.
I don't know if you guys have seen the most recent trailer, but it might make me actually reconsider my entire stance on comic book movies.
Really?
I think I might have had it all
wrong.
You're
going to do a complete 180?
I think I might, yeah.
Well, this will be a landmark occasion for sure.
I got a lot to catch up on, and I'm pretty excited. But yeah, I think I might be nothing but comic book guy for the next few months. I feel excited about it.
I finally saw Wonder Woman this past week.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that because it reminds me of something I forgot to talk about.
How great it was?
I was going to see, and I'm sorry, this is a total aside, and we'll get to the gambling in a second, but this is a fun little aside. I was going to see Killing of Sacred Deer a couple nights ago, and I'm walking into the theater, and that thing that is just awful, it just gives me the douche chills, where people are like, talking about the movie they just saw with like gusto. It's like, you got to let it seep in for a little bit. So there's these two middle-aged women out front, I guess middle-aged, you know, 30s probably, maybe 40s.
Easy.
30s, 40s. They're old enough to know what I'm about to say, okay? So the one is saying, oh, my God. And then there's that one part where Thor is, like, coming down, and you hear that music, and it just kicks in. You're like, yeah, it's happening. It's happening. And I'm hearing this as I'm approaching the door. I'm like, oh, what a horrible conversation. I know exactly what movie they're talking about.
Did it inspire
even say
you to
Thor.
Put a scene like that in groupers? Like no one people
they
like?
They didn't even say Thor. They said, oh, and then he comes down, and you hear that rock and roll music. And then the chick's like, yeah, what song was that? She's like, I don't know. It sounded a lot like Wonder Woman, though. It sounded a lot like the Wonder Woman. And then the other chick says, oh, no, it's a classic rock and roll band, isn't it? And she's like, I don't know.
Please tell me you said something.
Oh, no. I just escaped the conversation, went in the doors. It's a fucking Immigrant Song, which is a phenomenal song. But the fact that these... Like the one girl who's like said Wonder Woman, she thought that they actually stole it from Wonder Woman.
Oh, like they repurposed.
Like they're like, that Wonder Woman music's pretty good. We should produce something that sounds like that.
Yeah.
Oh, you fuck.
Use the song.
Maybe there's gonna be a Wonder Woman Thor mashup.
Oh, did they bang?
They could. They're both Norse gods. They're
very attractive.
She's an Amazon.
Folks.
He's a Norse. Yeah.
Yeah, but she's got Chris Pine in her back pocket.
That's true.
Mm. Yeah. Can't say anything.
All right, where are we going? I got to get a score.
What's your number?
I almost forgot that story. What did you say about Wonder Woman?
Nothing.
Logan loved it.
I forgot.
Yeah, it was meh.
No, but what did you say? What made you say Wonder Woman to begin with?
Oh, you just brought up out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, I don't know. It was kind of me.
You just said Wonder Woman.
I was feeling silence.
It was a Justice League
We were talking about connection. Superhero fatigue, and then I just was feeling silence.
What's your score?
Heinz 57.
41. You see, I mean, they're trying to goof it up and make it funny.
Yeah.
I usually just push people and run away. I don't know how to fight.
Honestly, if it's 22, I wouldn't be shocked.
Despite their best efforts, the Rotten Tomatoes score did leak out this morning through Flixster.
Oh, do you have a third-party report?
So at the time that it was the screenshots were grabbed, it was about 49%.
Ooh.
You're where?
41. And you're 58? 57? Ooh, that we're at dead heat right now, I think. Just about, right?
Eight? Yeah, I'm a little closer. Eight? Oh, eight for me and eight
for you. Yeah, eight.
Damn it.
Eight on either side.
No, 41 you said?
Yeah, and it's 49 right now.
No. Oh, yeah, you're right. I'm counting my score.
Yeah, eight. Yeah, we're dead heat.
Dead heat?
Yeah.
Logan, get a movie ready.
Ticks up, ticks down. Ticks up. Oh, I'm feeling ticks down.
I don't feel good about this.
I got to be better about getting movies prepped and ready to throw your way.
I got a whole list.
Oh, I just thought of one that would have been great. Did I give you one yet?
You told me to see some bullshit.
Wonderstruck, right.
What did you think of?
Nah, I'm not going to have time to get to that next week, so no. It's a movie that I've been holding at bay. I just haven't had time to work it in, but it's very exciting. A documentary that's available
on
Netflix.
Well, tell me.
That's
it. I want to see an exciting documentary.
It's going to be available. It's going to be available for a while. Documentary. Oh, my God. I'm such a... I'm such a hypocrite. I was giving you shit earlier in the episode, and I realize we're going way over time here. And my apologies.
Apologies
for being
next show.
Self-indulgent here, but giving you shit about only seeing movies that are about things that interest you. This particular movie that I keep talking about, I talked about it last week, and I'm still not going to talk about it next week. I've seen it and I love it, and I can't wait to talk about it. Ice Guardians. It's a hockey documentary.
Oh, that's right.
About enforcers. Really good documentary. I'm not going to talk about it at length for a couple weeks here because I got too many other movies to get to, but it's probably the best documentary I've seen on hockey.
You've already seen it.
And I almost missed it because I was getting confused with an Alex Gibney movie that came out a couple years ago, The Last Gladiators.
Do you want me to see the one you've seen?
No, because I can't do it next week.
Oh, why?
Because I got other movies lined up.
Right. But you can do Wonder?
Struck, Brian. Wonderstruck. That's one of the movies that I have lined up.
What if I see Wonder?
You're going to because you're fucking Brian.
Thanks, Luke.
Wonderstruck, Brian.
Luke from Portland. He did our listener art this week. Luke.
Inspired by the Top 5 Vacations episode.
Ah, very good.
Very good.
Oh, my God. How many people are in there that we know?
I see Carano. Oh, I see.
Like, where's Waldo?
Why are you right in the middle, though? I don't enjoy that.
Because it was his vacation.
What is that?
Oh, was it his? Oh, yeah, that's right. I gotta
is that Corolla? Oh my God, this bear is a lot. Someone spent a lot of time on this.
Oh, I like this one a lot. I like
Who's
it a lot.
That?
What we're looking at is a black and white photo.
Who these people are?
A black
is that Tara?
Some of them are actually from the picture. So
is that Tara?
Yeah,
Tara Limbar?
Tara Limbar.
Is it Tara?
I don't know. I can't see from here. What we're looking at is a shining black and white
wow,
picture.
Wow, that is
the movie
someone
ends
did a lot of work
and,
on that.
There's a bunch of like people that are connected to the
Can
show.
Can the listener send along like a guide, like as people looking or like or like find them all? Just a list of who's in there?
Like a legend?
I'll reply to the email and ask.
Yeah. Hey, listeners, if you see it, leave a comment on the site.
Who did that one?
Tell them who you see.
Who did that one?
Luke. Luke from Portland.
Luke, that's a good job, my friend.
Excellent, my friend. Effort. A for effort. A plus for effort.
Well, no, that's what you say to somebody who like did a shit job,
no,
but they worked hard
no,
on it. That's
you
really
a plus
good.
For overall creativity.
A plus
also
for
effort
for
is
the product.
One component. Effort is one component. And the component was great. Thank you, Luke. Check out Anderson and Brian for that. Check out AndersonandBrian.com for links to our future artists. Who Logan, do you have any idea who they were this week? Or do you know how
not yet. I haven't had a chance to pick them yet.
Well, the list
It'll
will
be
on AndersonandBrian.com. A list of our films discussed, links to all of them, comment on the episodes, tell us who you see in the picture. Yeah, subscribe on Patreon if you don't mind. Click through the Amazon banner. AndersonandBrian.com is right up top. The Film Vault on Facebook and Twitter if you want to vote on our top fives. Logan remembers to put them up.
Groupers update. It's kind of late to be actually given an official update. Maybe I'll be a little bit more forthcoming next week. But I have five separate editors now working on the film.
Oh, man.
Simultaneously.
You got an influx of cash?
That's what I'm going to have to scratch some up somewhere because that means four new drives and shipping and
five new people to pay.
Four new people to pay as well. Thanks, ZipRecruiter. Not kidding. So I'll be talking. I do have groupers stuff that I had on reserve for a rainy day like this that I will be announcing a little bit more about next week. But the new deadline for the picture lock is end of year with a completion date looking like March.
Nice.
March.
Oh, excellent. Very much looking forward to this.
Yes.
Congratulations in advance. And until next time,
we do it for Van Gogh.